they've been number one for 8 weeks. That's Seether with Country Song. Can they maintain their grip at number one for a ninth week? You got to tune in next week to find out. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you on the radio and on the road.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead, stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Most WRAF contests are open to legal U.S. residents at least 18 years old. Winners may win only one contest every 30 days or every 6 months for prizes worth $600 or more. Employees and their family of Greater Media Detroit, its advertising agencies, and other radio stations in the metro area may not participate. No purchase necessary, prizes are not transferable, and rules are subject to change at any time. Complete rules are available online at WRIF.com or at the WRIF studios during regular business hours.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Jalene.
Hello, Peter. Good to be here.
One of these days, one of these nights, you know, about, I don't know, about 14 a year that people in Michigan live for, right?
Weather-wise?
Yeah, weather-wise. Yeah. We're always told.
I thought you meant our show, but that's more than 14.
Well, we're always taught in radio school, which neither you nor I went to.
I did.
Did you?
Well, I have a degree in broadcast journalism, Peter.
Well, journalism, yeah, but usually they tell you, you know, don't talk about the weather, it's boring. But
okay, you're right.
In Michigan, we can talk about it, because usually it's too cold, it's too hot, it's just been perfect.
It was lovely.
Yeah, so lots going on, in fact, too much. You know, I think after years of doing shows, particularly talk shows, my stage fright anxiety level hovers around zero.
Yeah,
but sometimes when I look across this console and see way too many stories. And
way too many subjects.
And way too many subjects. Things are going rapidly, I don't know, out of control. Hey, but you can help us figure it all out. You can join us at 313-298-WRIF because it is a phone-in talk show.
If
you don't have those letters on your phone, the number is
313-298-9743.
If you'd like to call us, well, that's the number. If you'd like to email us, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/nightcall. And Athena and Sarah will be taking your calls at 313-298-9743.
They're already doing it.
The phones are already lighting up. Yeah. So, I'm being too generous with the pronouns. They will have our podcast up by noon tomorrow. Yeah. So, I'm coming in. And I'm listening to this absolutely awful right-wing talk show.
I don't know why you do this to yourself.
Well, I want to find out, you know, what are they talking about? What are they filling people's brains with? And you would have thought up to a point that you had some liberal or left-wing show on because they were just denouncing all the wars of the United States. You know, Republicans and right-wingers, they never met a war they didn't like, right?
Yeah.
And they're war-mongers in the sense of encouraging wars. They're all into militarism as a culture. You know, not
for sure.
Not that these are citizens. Soldiers.
It's a way of life.
Yeah, that sometimes you know that wars have to be fought, but they militarism as this positive value, this manly, culture of strength and armaments and
kill
for peace.
Right.
Yeah, there's a group called the Fugs. F-U-G-S.
Yeah?
Yeah, they have a great song called Kill for Peace.
Oh, I've not heard that one.
You may want to Google it. It's old, but it's an oldie but a goodie.
But the words still,
And but here is this right-winger just could have, I don't know where, I don't know what to compare him to. Me. He was saying, we are fighting wars in five Muslim countries. No wonder people hate us. that it's draining the treasury, that people don't understand what they're
about.
But
he probably just started saying this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, we said it starting in 2001.
Yeah. Interestingly, he said, had George Bush done any of these things, the outcry would have been much greater.
He did do all of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, except for the new.
He was talking about Libya and all of that.
Uh-huh.
But then he said, he veered off into his right-wing thing, saying the peace movement has exposed itself for the hypocrites they are because they are not protesting Obama's wars at all.
That's not true.
It's absolutely insane.
That is so not true. I mean, we're still anti-war, still protesting. Where is this guy? And clearly he doesn't have his facts straight.
Well, and you can go to, say, like commondreams.org, a great site.
Yeah.
You go to truthout.org, or is it .com? I don't know. Well, actually.
It's .org.
Okay.
I think.
And, well.
Either one, you'll find it.
It's truthout.org, indeed.
Okay,
and you can link on those from my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. But you've heard of Arab Spring. They're talking about a European summer with all these demonstrations and sit-ins in Spain and occupations that are going on, that people are saying no to all the austerity that is trying to be forced down their throats. In other words, just like here, the common people they're trying to make the common people pay for what the banksters and the politicians created. And in Europe, they're saying, no, ain't going to do it. But we're talking now about American Fall in Washington, D.C. On my website, it says, if any U.S. troops, contractors, or mercenaries remain in Afghanistan on Thursday, October 6th, that would be the beginning of the 11th year, as that occupation goes into its 11th year, Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. will be occupied that day, making it our Tahrir Square. Remember in Cairo, that's where they all were?
Yes.
Our Madison, Wisconsin, where we will nonviolently resist the corporate machine until our resources are invested in human needs and environmental protection here in the United States instead of war and exploitation. What a concept.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, these people, wow, they're pretty rich. But Bruce Fein, F-E-I-N, who was a deputy attorney general under President Ronald Reagan, and he's the author of Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy, and American Empire Before the Fall. Now, this is a conservative. This is a guy who rode with Reagan. He said today, the statements of President Obama, Secretary of Defense Designate Leon Panetta, and Senator John McCain that the president is constitutionally crowned with authority unilaterally to initiate war in the national interest is a page out of George Orwell's 1984. I hope everybody knows what that book is. And Bruce Fein says, every word uttered at the Constitutional Convention, he's talking back, 1776, or when in the 1780s, and ratification debates in the Constitution's text confirm that only Congress can authorize war. Now, you can say, well, that was 200 and some odd years ago.
There are certain times where I think that works, where it's like, that was 200 years ago. When it comes to maybe women's rights or things like that.
Or slavery, but, like it's in the Constitution.
Or that little thing called slavery.
But here is what the Founding Fathers were concerned about, is that there would be a powerful executive, something we have now that, that has increased every year, probably since World War II. And certainly Barack Obama's done nothing to stem the tide of that.
Yep.
The Founding Fathers, having come from England where kings reigned, and you got to remember, there was nothing like the United States as a political entity anywhere in the world. These guys literally invented the wheel.
Yeah.
It wasn't a matter of reinventing. They invented the wheel. And they were so concerned that a strong executive would turn into a tyranny that they vested almost all the power for making laws into the Congress end of things. And the duty of the executive, the president, was to carry out those mandates, to exercise those laws, to enforce them, not to on his own say, we need to attack this country because, and then you wind up with a George Bush, or now with
Barack Obama.
With Barack
so
Obama.
What happened?
What do you mean?
How did it get here?
Oh, well, it was this slow process of erosion. There was an attempt after Vietnam and another one of those wars based totally on lies. The United States had no business being involved in it and had to fabricate this lie in order to justify the United States going into it, that something called the War Powers Act was passed in 1973. And that meant that, whoa, there is some major emergency. It wasn't a matter of a fleet of sailing ships coming mm-hmm. over to the United States, and you had a lot of time to deal with this stuff, that it, maybe there was missiles or something like that, or an attack on the United States was imminent, or we were just attacked. But then the president was required under the War Powers Act to go to Congress and say, well, look, here's what happened. And I forgot somewhere in here how many days he has to say, here's why I did this and here's why I had to do this and I want you to approve it. Well, President Obama, contrary to the advice of some of his key legal advisors, said, we're not involved in hostilities in Libya. Well, I'm looking, where did that go? There's this right-wing, why don't I look at all this right-wing stuff? But I'm not even going to give the name of it. I mean, I don't want to give these people any publicity.
Best, right.
And their lead story is NATO nightmare, 9 civilians killed. Now, the United States does not have any planes flying over there anymore, but we're involved in spending a lot of our tax dollars. We're involved in logistics, a lot of supply. And, you know, the idea, and I think this is...
Our hands are in it,
yeah. I think this has been gone over a lot. I mean, you know, that this is hostilities, and if you don't believe it is, ask the people on the ground that are having, that are being bombed by French and British planes. So, the right winger is correct that we're involved in fighting in 5 Muslim countries, which engenders all sorts of hatred for us. Believe me, I mean, there could still be these right-wing Muslim extremist nuts, religious nuts, that might still, you know, want to do stuff.
I don't know why there wouldn't be. Not to be negative, Nelly here.
Well,
but
it would certainly reduce the kind of anger that exists against the United States.
Absolutely.
So that would be a good idea to get out.
Yeah.
Just 26% of Americans favored continued military action in Libya.
So that's good. The numbers are down.
Yep. And interestingly now, who's stepping up as anti-war activists? The mayors of big cities.
Amazing.
Yeah, because they go, well, wait a minute. If we weren't fighting these unfunded wars, we wouldn't be broke. If we stopped these wars immediately, maybe we'd have a few million. Congress spending $126 billion a year fighting these wars. And you know what? This is just, I'm just reading this quickly out of the New York Times. I suspect if it was really factored in well, that would be, that amount of money would be really over the top. And what is this? Oh, yeah, this. Pardon me. Where does our, in the winter it's colds, and in the spring, which it still is for another couple of days, it's allergies. Man. Should have got into another line of business.
Forget it, Peter.
Too late now. Poland and the United States signed a deal on Monday to allow the United States Air Force to station personnel in Poland.
So now who are we pissing off?
Yeah. I mean, what would you think if we heard this thing that that Russia was going to be stationing troops in Nicaragua or something like that?
Yeah.
The agreement, endorsed by President Obama during his visit to Warsaw last month, provides for a small air detachment to be in place by 2013 to train Polish pilots in the use of F-16 warplanes and C-130 transport planes.
That's the one that Cheney was really hot on.
Now, who
wasn't
manufactures
it?
Those things? They must be domestic. They are our planes. And so let me see. We're giving money to Poland.
Okay, and then they give us the money back and we give them the planes. Right?
No, wait a minute. We get taxed.
Yeah.
And we're in a hole for everything, right?
Yeah.
Education, roads, people's pay, city services, libraries, police and fire. And so we're going to be giving Poland millions, probably, they don't do millions anymore, billions.
Yeah, that's chump change.
And they are going to then use, they're going to buy F-16s from us, and that we're buying, I get it, we're buying airplanes for Poland.
that's pretty much how it goes.
Nobody objects to that, do they?
I mean, really?
Yeah, what the
harmless.
Hell? Come on.
Harmless fun.
Also,
harmless business.
Think about anything you know that has to do with what we're suffering because of this deficit, and I don't mean so much like foreclosures and all that, but the fact that there's just not enough money around. How about this? Missing Iraqi billions, probably stolen. This month, the Pentagon and the Iraqi government are finally closing the books on the program that handled funding for reconstruction in post-war Iraq. Well, why did it need reconstruction? I forgot.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We bombed the hell out of them.
We bombed the crap out of them. Yeah, so that's it. I mean, that's part of the deal. We spend all this money on this military apparatus that destroys this country, and then we hire Dick Cheney's firm and his buddies and all these people to rebuild it. But anyway. So, I mean, that's only fair. We destroy a country, we ought to rebuild it. I don't even have a major problem with that. I have a major problem in the first place that this all occurred. But despite years of investigation, U.S. defense officials still cannot say what happened to $6.6 billion in cash. Now, cash, and I'll remember that.
Federal auditors
are now suggesting that some or all of the cash may have been stolen. After the U.S.-led invasion in March 2003, the Bush administration flooded Iraq with so much cash that a new unit of measurement was born. Pentagon officials determined that one giant C-130's Hercules cargo plane could carry $2.4 billion in shrink-wrapped bricks of U.S. $100 bills.
Whoa.
They sent an initial full plane load of cash, followed by 20 other flights by May 2004 in a U.S. $12 billion haul that U.S. officials believe to be the biggest ever international cash airlift. So, again, whose money was this? This was our money. We had a certain number of options of what to do with all of this. $12 billion of it in shrink-wrapped $100 bills, and sometimes troops, maybe some of you guys that were over there saw this, but they would come in and just go into villages and distribute $100 bills to people.
Yep.
So, I mean, we got to talk about this now. By the way, if you want to comment on this or anything else, Peter Werbe and Jelaine Jordan with you on WRIF, 313-298-9743.
Oh, good job, Peter. We know Wienergate happened.
Yeah,
we do have an opinion on that. And I have to say, I heard a talk show earlier this week, and the talk show host said, you know, the talkers don't get into the talking about war very much because people don't find it sexy. They don't like to talk about it. Well, I beg to differ because we have talked a great deal about that on this show, and with you, the audience.
You know this Representative Congressman Anthony Weiner, the story went international.
Of course it did. It had to do with appendage.
This guy sent, inappropriate, if they were. I mean, what? I don't know. You know when they're inappropriate? When they come to light.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And remember we were saying last week, the main thing we care about is the hypocrisy factor. In other words, if you're, like hooking up with somebody, if a man is hooking up with somebody in a bathroom, for gay sex.
Yeah. In the airport, for example.
Yeah. I mean, so what? I mean, it's none of my business. I don't care. And I wouldn't care whether my senator or my representative was doing it. Mm-hmm. I would care what was his politics on the floor of the House of Representatives or the Senate.
If you were anti-gay legislation, for example.
Well, there it is. I mean, because when these guys turn out to be like the Senator Vitter from Louisiana, they got, that was exposed as, he was a family values guy.
But he was doing the prostitute.
He was doing
the
prostitute. Yeah. It was Senator Weidstance from Idaho.
The prostitute, there's
these guys were just major hypocrites. Thank you. It's easy for you to say. Hypocrites, yeah. Anthony Weiner was just, kind of a sex freak.
He was doing a little, sexting kind of thing. And, and the Republicans, none of the Republicans called for David Vitter to resign.
They maybe did for Senator Larry Craig of Idaho.
I don't think they did for that one either.
Well, he was actually accused of a crime.
Okay, so maybe that's but the Democrats were right on this guy.
You know what though, there wasn't a big hue and cry from the Republicans about Representative Weiner resigning because they knew that they were kind of in a spot because a lot of their guys had done things as
well. Well, it's like the glass, don't throw rocks at glass houses.
And plus, there's these new pictures that show Weiner cross-dressing and oiled up, and all this stuff. And but it was the Democrats. It was, and I think it was absolutely inappropriate for the Democrats to demand that he resign. I think it was stupid of him to resign. And what they should have done, this was up to the people of his district. There's another 14, months or so left. And if they didn't like what he did,
reelect him.
They would have defeated him. Yeah. Now, Anthony Weiner, I mean, I could slap that fool's face because he should have known, regardless of what I said, this is the kind of thing that destroys people, and this has destroyed him. And he was one of the most effective people on the left.
Yeah.
I guess when he wasn't,
busy.
Busy. I would put it another way. When he wasn't making wonderful speeches, confronting the right, refusing to compromise with them the way so many Democrats do, he was off there taking crotch shots.
I know. He was very into his crotch.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Actually, this must be yours because... this, Weiner, he resigns. He may still be able to collect his pension and other benefits that could total more than $1 million during his lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be fine.
Now, let me ask you this. I mean, we got to have a little fun with this, then we're going to not have the fun part.
Okay.
But if you were the Oscar Mayer people, or Oscar Mayer? Mayer.
Oscar Mayer Weiner.
Yeah, what would you do?
I don't know.
I would send the Wienermobile food truck around.
Well, they did.
They are. And he's going to be downtown on Tuesday. Where is this? At the Rivard Plaza. Well, I was just there the other day. That's at the foot of Rivard. Rivard is one street kind of east of I-75 when it hits Jefferson. That's where the river walk is, part of the river walk.
Yeah,
and they got a carousel for kids. Beautiful
great
spot.
Great down there.
Yeah, so they're going to be down there serving up free Oscar Mayer selects beef frank. So that's what I think. They took advantage of this. But, you know, when you think...
I think it's all... There's some conspiracy there,
yeah,
Peter.
When you think, though, about what he did, which is, in a lot of ways, just sort of naughty. And again, the real error that he made was that he got caught. I mean,
Duh.
But here, this is this wonderful column by our old pal Earl O'Fari Hutchinson.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, we used to interview him all the time. Said that every Democrat from the White House down screamed loudly for New York Representative Anthony Weiner to resign, and he finally did. But it's not a Democrat that's breathing the biggest sigh of relief at Weiner's downfall. It's Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
There was much talk a year ago that Weiner would be the point man on the House Judiciary Committee if it decided to go after Thomas for his long trail of financial manipulations, abuse, and duplicity. This is a man on the Supreme Court that is so corrupt in his dealings that he doesn't, well, I guess it's probably born out of such arrogance that he can be directly involved politically with people on the far right wing and these multimillionaire and billionaires and be still involved in adjudicating their cases and try to appear that he is objective.
Yeah, unbiased. Are you talking about the thing with his wife?
Well, there's lots of things.
He didn't, on his taxes, he checked the box that his wife did not make any income.
Yeah,
and it was $975,000, from what I recall.
He has, funded his wife, Jenny. He's gotten money from the ultra-conservative Koch brothers, the Coors family, the Richard Mellon Scape, all of which have a major interest in any number of Supreme Court rulings.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but he didn't disclose her speaking fees or the perks that he got from when he would speak at these conservative groups. Then there is a strong hint that Thomas perjured himself in his testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee during his court hearing in 1991.
Anita Hill.
Yeah. His ex-girlfriend, not Anita Hill, just said the guy was a total sex freak. This is Justice Thomas, that he was obsessed with pornography, that whenever he was around women, he made a constant stream of sexual remarks. The old pubic hair on the Coke can. Thing. Yeah, yeah. So he was just on and on. Like that. But now, though...
How could any woman subject herself to that guy?
I don't know.
That's so gross.
Yeah. But so now he is involved... Man, do I not have that one?
Which one?
The one where this latest deal where he's involved in getting millions of dollars, Justice Clarence Thomas, for this museum... that he was putting together.
Oh, is that the one in Arkansas, the Walmart
Georgia.
One?
No, that's another one.
Okay.
This is a museum. So he's actually, he's getting pet projects. This is Justice Clarence Thomas, that is being funded by this far right wing billionaire.
Well, so surprising.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if
these people, these guys just cannot help themselves.
They can't. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Well, we got somebody from far away. Maybe we'll get them on real quick. 313-298-9743. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. Here is Sandra. She's calling from Sacramento, California. Sandra, thanks for picking our show up way out there.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Sandra.
Listen.
Wait. Are you from Detroit?
No, man, I'm not. No, I'm from California.
You sound like a Detroiter.
Well, you know, chocolate cities all over the world.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Libya thing is really quite disturbing. You know, they were talking about, you know, trying to sue Obama to get him to stop, but they don't have any standing. All they can do is bring a bill of impeachment.
Yeah.
Okay, also with Libya, did you know that they have their own central bank? It's publicly owned, and they can create their own money. There's a lot of issues in Libya. Libya sure. also had the highest standard of living in Africa before the non-war started.
Right.
So this is like an imperial adventure to allow global capital free reign again against a regime that wasn't playing ball. I mean, it's the most despicable thing, and Obama is like... it's like Bush Reduck. In fact, it don't seem to make no difference with this fool. And the people who gave him the Nobel Prize, yeah. Wow. Are they embarrassed or what by now?
Well,
it's not real peaceful.
Yeah,
not real peaceful.
It's not real peaceful. It's and five wars going on. I mean, even Secretary of Defense Gates, who's retiring, he said that he thinks the American people are tiring of these wars of choice. Well, gee, do you think? I mean, it's not a matter that we're getting war weary or something like that. I mean, the fact that we've had thousands of people killed, hundreds of thousands of soldiers wounded. I forgot what 300,000 soldiers have received some sort of head injuries, but the billions and billions of dollars. I mean, this is what sunk the American economy. And I guess we did, Sandra, expect that Barack Obama was going to disengage from all of this. But I don't know. It's just, you know, what's that whole thing about a body in motion has a tendency to continue. And that's what happens. So it's the old inertia thing. All right. Thanks for calling from Sacramento, California. Man, is it hot in Sacramento? You're going to Sacramento like a time like now it's 98 degrees.
Whew.
And then you go, you know, I don't know, it's 100 miles to San Francisco, and it's 30 degrees.
Cool. Amazing.
Yeah. Here is Michael and Troy. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
I'm here.
You good.
There?
Me too.
Hi, Michael.
Hello. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're good.
It's good.
What's
hey,
up?
I was talking to the lady that answered the phone earlier. I just think it's absolutely repulsive of how our government is spending all this money in these foreign countries doing things such and
wars.
The typical rule of
cutting out a little bit.
Typical rule of what? You know what?
You're cutting out.
Yeah, you cut out.
Let's put you on hold and maybe...
Well, we get your point. I mean, I think we agree with that. Thank you, Michael. We're going to cut out. All right. Here, Jack wants to talk about the wiener. Go ahead, Jack. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Peter?
We're good. Jalene's doing good, too.
I was walking my dog about 6 months ago on Shaner near the M59 Hall Road.
You sound like an East Sider.
Yeah, I've seen that Oscar Mayer Wiener truck go by down Shaner.
You know where you can see it, by the way? A very cool Oscar Mayer Wiener mobile is in the Henry Ford Museum. They have one.
Yeah, I've seen this one there, and the first thought of my mind was, I wonder how many tons of booze and marijuana you could store in that hot dog.
What?
What?
The cops would never suspect.
Oh, jeez. You're thinking.
Yeah. Well,
how many
good.
Rush Limbaughs you could fit in there?
Three.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Jack.
Jack.
Thanks for that thoughtful remark. Here's Brad in West Bloomfield. Brad, hi. You're on the air.
How you doing, Peter? Hi, Jillian.
Hi. We're
Hello.
Good.
Great.
Well, I wanted to get your take on something. I have a personal belief that if you're in the political field, in any form of the political field, I really don't think that you should have a Facebook, a Twitter, a MySpace account, you know.
Why?
It seems to me like the slip of the tongue could put us in jeopardy. you know, if the wrong people see it, you know, if
easy to make mistakes. And it's easy to say one thing and have your whole world blow up.
Yeah, you know, you don't want, you know, a politician with loose lips sinking ships, you know, as the old proverb was.
A happy trigger finger.
Yeah, right. And, you know, this whole Wiener thing, I thought it was classic when he was resigning and the guy who was screaming in the background, pervert.
Yeah, he said, bye-bye, pervert. And that was a guy from the
Howard Stern show.
Yeah.
I thought it was classic. And kudos to Howard Stern for setting the guy up in there. That was great. And
you know what? First off, I don't think Wiener should have even had a... I mean, why does he feel he has to have this public resignation? Why did he, he set himself up again. But, no, actually, I thought... I don't want to say distasteful, but I didn't like the guy
from the show
at all, because essentially they were just using, on one hand, this political situation, this human tragedy, just to
self-promote.
Yeah. I mean, and the media, which is ultimately responsible for all of this, because all the real issues that affect us, that affect our personal lives, our families, our communities, all of that just gets, I mean, we said he's become this diversion. We got to be talking about the economy. People go yawn, you know, stuff like that. Well, they don't yawn in Greece. They don't yawn in England. They don't yawn in France. They're not yawning in Spain. People are saying you are not going to take you are not going to make us pay for this crisis. And instead, here we're all talking about Wienergate. All right, I got to take a break. Thank you, Brad. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Does your furnace need repair? Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Is your roof leaking? Or are you ready to replace your windows? Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Big or small, no matter what your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro at fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online source of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. You can have instant access to roofers, plumbers, maids, handymen, chimney sweeps, remodelers, and many other professionals. Visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com and find the right home pro for your project. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com. If you have a job instead of a career, will you be satisfied tomorrow? But if you develop knowledge and skills, who knows how far you can go? If you're interested in electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology, call ITT Technical Institute. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
I guess we got caught up in the crazy housing boom.
We had been in the house so long we didn't want to lose it.
What these people share is that they all got in trouble with their mortgages and they all called a certified housing counselor for help.
Our housing counselor looked at our paperwork and she knew something was wrong.
She understood what needed to be done and she helped me work it out with the bank.
This is a free service. Call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling now. Call 1-866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org.
We've been two of a kind since we were kids, right?
Yep, we get the
same sports, same college, go Muskrats, even the same car.
And the same
car insurance. Yeah, we both got e-surance because of all their discounts.
But I got
mine. I got all my e-surance discounts over the phone. I like a good dialogue.
And I got mine,
through their website, right?
Right.
Yeah. You've never been much of a conversationalist, huh?
Learn about car insurance discounts your way when you get a quote today at esurance.com or 1-800-ESURANCE. Esurance, technology when you want it, people when you don't.
Not available in all states.
Some restrictions apply. Discounts may vary by state.
See site for details.
Woo! Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief, managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
The following contains a toll-free number for individuals looking to lose 30 pounds or more.
Please pay attention. If you would like to be among the first to try a weight loss supplement that's proven to help you lose weight, please call the toll-free number at the end of this ad. If you do, you will receive a risk-free trial of an exclusive weight loss aid that does not require a prescription. By enrolling in the 30-day risk-free trial, you'll be able to burn fat more quickly by boosting your metabolic heart rate, allowing you to lose weight in days instead of weeks. Be among the first to call and get your trial risk-free. 1-800-507-7923. Again, if you would like to try a proven weight loss supplement that could help you lose 30 pounds or more without a prescription, you may now call for the risk-free trial. Call Acai Fresh now. 1-800-507-7923. 1-800-507-7923. You may begin calling now. 1-800-507-7923.
Today we're asking when
you do. June 26th, Spartan Stadium. The Riff has your free tickets every hour starting at 11 a.m. with Ann Carlini. You do Tuesday on 101 WRIF.
Go on, go for it.
Do it. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. At our phone number, 313-298-9743, some open lines.
There are. Give a call.
You had a quizzical look in your eye.
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Okay. I should have announced this ahead of time before our commercials, but you've never been to the Arab American Festival in Dearborn, have you?
No.
Wonderful. One of these ethnic fairs with great food, great entertainment. Whole community turns out, mostly Arab Americans, but
I
also
heard it's a wonderful
yeah,
festival.
Also, folks like me that want to go down we don't have to just eat roast beef and mashed potatoes, right?
Yeah, right.
But who are these right-wing Christian freaks that go there and try to make a miserable mess of it? Did you see this?
The one guy, I'm trying to download that. Sorry. Shouldn't have done it while I was on the air. I'll get it out. Here we go. Oh, sorry.
This is, okay. You're trying to download
yeah,
to
I'm
our
gonna,
Facebook.
I'm going to do it after the show.
Okay.
All right.
We mentioned earlier the old group, the Fugs, F-U-G-S, Kill for Peace, and we were trying to download it to our Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/nightcall, and it's not on there right now.
I'm going to do it on my computer. It's a little bit better than this computer.
Get this story. A young Muslim girl broke down in tears after passing by a group of Christian missionaries who continued to yell insults Saturday at Muslims and others during the Arab International Festival in Dearborn. The missionaries are also targeting Catholics. This is why you just hope that these people keep their religion out of the public square. I mean, that's the phraseology that these right-wingers say. You know, they're trying to kick religion out of the public square. Yes, and we were talking earlier about the Constitution.
Right.
And when you allow these freaks like this, no matter where you are in the religious spectrum, no matter what your religion is, you've always got this percentage of these militants that think that they have a pipeline to God and that they're then going to self-righteously I don't know, make life... Well, this is
that Koran-burning pastor from Florida.
He was back. Yeah. But he got actually stopped. This was just a group of people. They went into the midst of this family affair in Dearborn. Usually on Warren Avenue. I'm not sure if it's still... Oh, yeah, it's on Warren Avenue. Last time I was there, they had these enormous signs saying, "Your God is a pervert."
It's just terrible. I mean, these people, I just am speechless.
Yeah, they are. They, you know, I saw a little video of one who was saying, all I did, wanted to do was ask him about this passage in the Quran that said about killing the enemies of Allah. And I just wanted to ask him about that. And I'm thinking, did he ever read the Old Testament?
Yeah, really.
Anyway, so they're making this little girl cry, and she's crying because of what they said to the father of the young girl, who cried after hearing the missionaries on Warren Avenue in Dearborn, as depicted on a YouTube video. The Arab International Festival, which continues today, is the largest, it's Sunday, it's not anymore, largest outdoor gathering of Arab Americans in the country, and so has increasingly attracted Christian missionaries who believe Islam has taken over the city of Dearborn. Listen, you freaks!
Seriously.
Keep out of our area. Damn these people.
I know.
Well, you're right. Quran-burning pastor Terry Jones canceled plans to speak against Islam at the Arab festival after a crowd of protesters blocked him, but other Christian missionaries attended. One of them called themselves the Bible believers and railed against Arabs, Muslim, and Islam through a bullhorn. They held up a sign. Oh, here it was, calling Islam's prophet a pervert. Now, I'm not trying to defend any religion.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that atheists are dismissive of all religions and may be derogatory about...
And all religions dismiss we atheists.
Yeah, but for one religion to enter the sphere of another with a hostile intent...
Words of hate, pure hate.
Yeah, we love... in fact, one of them, they said these Christian missionaries were... walking around with T-shirts reading "I love Muslims" on the front with a Bible verse on the back.
Oh, that is so disgusting.
They're handing out literature that says Muslims worship a moon god and should convert to Christianity.
Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everywhere you look where there are these religious disputes where people are killing each other because they have a better... pipeline to their particular god than the other people, and they're willing to kill for it.
Yeah.
I mean,
and this Terry Jones, he tried to get down to the festival. He was part of this rally that he and these freaks held. And then as he walked toward it, the protesters against him kept blocking him every path. And finally, the cops had to get him and his other freak buddy out of there. And he then decided not to do it.
I'm sort of mixed on that because I have this libertarian and civil liberties kind of sense that people ought to be able to say anything, even obnoxious.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's certainly inappropriate, but I don't know. You know, you could say, and people have in the past, that it's inappropriate to criticize the president or that it's, George Bush wouldn't, his goon squad wouldn't let people into his rallies that were wearing anti-Bush T-shirts or weren't even saying anything.
Yeah, yeah. I was one of them. I was behind a big gate once. Remember if they put up the gates at the inauguration,
the counter inauguration.
Yeah, they put these large fences up to keep us crazies away.
But who knows? Maybe there's a, what's that thing? God works in mysterious ways. Governor Rick Perry of Texas. He says that the current economic crisis is part of God's plan to return us to biblical principles. You know what? I thought it was, how dumb I am.
Yeah?
I thought it was the banksters. And George Bush lying us into trillion-dollar wars and cutting taxes for his wealthy buddies, but it's all part of the plan.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. How dumb we are.
We are, sure.
I think in America, says Perry, from time to time, we have to go through some difficult times, and I think we're going through those difficult times for a purpose, to bring us back to those biblical principles.
Whatever. Whatever.
Whew. These guys.
Give me a break.
What else? Just so we should... Texas governor addresses L.A. anti-abortion rally. So he came, Texas Governor Rick Perry showed up in Los Angeles to address a largely Hispanic group of 5,000 people at an anti-abortion rally in Los Angeles. He spoke in English. He urged the crowd to keep up the pressure to roll back the landmark 1973 Supreme Court decision legalizing abortion. Since Roe v. Wade, Perry said, 50 million children have lost their chance at life. Well, let's look at that sentence. Well, I wonder what things would be like if we had another 50 million people here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, I'm not advocating abortion for population control, but the fact of the matter is we had another 50 million people, it would be kind of strange. Also, these weren't children. I mean, children are living human beings, fetuses. You can have that opinion, but it has no recognition in law. And probably this time, we rarely criticize Judaism, but this one may take the cake. Did you see this? Jewish court sentences dog to death by stoning. I sent that to you. You didn't see
that? No.
A Jerusalem rabbinical court condemned to death by stoning a dog it suspects is the reincarnation of a secular lawyer who insulted the court's judges 20 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And this was according to Wynette. Yeah. According to Wynette, the large dog made its way into the Monetary Affairs Court in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish neighborhood of Mia Sharim in Jerusalem, frightening judges and plaintiffs. Despite attempts to drive the dog out of court, the hound refused to leave the premises. One of the sitting judges then recalled a curse the court had passed down upon a secular lawyer who had insulted the judges 20 years previously. Their preferred divine retribution was for the lawyer's spirit to move into the body of a dog and an animal considered impure by traditional Judaism. Clearly still offended, one of the judges sentenced the animal to death by stoning by local children. The canine target, however, managed to escape.
The dog's smarter than the men.
Oh, man.
Insanity. Really? What kind of a freak show is that over there?
Let's go to Fred in Detroit. Fred, thanks for calling 313-298-9743. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Well, you probably know that the justification for the war powers thing is 90 days.
Oh, that's right. That's right, 90 days.
And as far as Wiener's concerned, it's not just what he did. But it allows people like the Andrew Brightmores and that Lee Stillwater Atwater, whoever that clown was from back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, to jump out here in the media, tell lies, blow things up bigger than they are, you know, and create a circus on the left.
Sure. Well, let me tell you this. Beginning with Bill Clinton, or maybe, you know, there's been other Democratic politician scandal, sex scandals before. If I was a politician and I was doing what Andrew Wiener was saying, first off, I would never do it because I was thinking whenever any of this came down, it could have very well been not this beautiful porn star, but some Republican operative. But anyway, if I couldn't control myself, and a lot of guys can't, and they said to me, did you do all this tweeting and show you? I would say, my personal life is none of your business, and I'm not answering any of your questions, and then just, you know, go on the attack about some, you know, right-wing thing. But, you know, these guys, they start lying, and then it becomes more and more of an issue.
And a joke.
Snowball, and then a joke. And the guy, as Wiener said, he's been ridiculed all of his life because of his name.
I would change my name. It's really easy.
I
would change my name.
Yeah.
Well, here's a quick thought about Obama
okay.
and Libya. Now, do you realize it was a little over a year ago that the Republicans were raising hell with him that he wasn't doing enough to help Iran, the young folks in Iran?
That's right.
And if we weren't in this recession so deeply, they'd complain that he wasn't doing enough in Libya. That's how two-faced they are.
Well, they're not to be taken very seriously. I'm always surprised anyone does, but one of the things, you know, they're like a broken clock. They're correct twice a day. And in the sense that they're now challenged Barack Obama over the War Powers Act, the fact that he's violated it, they are correct, but they're doing it for purely, you know, political and as always hypocritical reasons. Hi, Fred. Thanks for joining us on the air. Appreciate you calling. Well, you know, there's more and more cutbacks. You know what I don't understand? You see all of what's going on. I mean, maybe you don't. I mean, sometimes I watch, you know, like the nightly news, mm-hmm. or I read all these news sites. And because of the work that Jalene and I do, we're much, much more immersed in political stuff than probably the average American is. And the average American isn't very immersed in political events. Yeah. All over the world, people are protesting against austerity policies of their government. So every government in the West is having financial problems. So they figure, well, gee, who could pay for it? Let me see. Corporations? No. Rich people? No. Who's that leave? Well, it leaves the middle class and leaves the poor, leaves the working class. Well, good. Let's put it on them because,
We can.
Yeah.
They'll take it.
And we're the politicians, and we're the rich and the corporations are our paymasters, so we certainly can't start can't mess with them. Mm-hmm. But it is the case that in, say, like Greece or any number of these other countries, Spain's a great example, because what's happened is particularly young people have just said, we're setting up these permanent encampments of resistance and protest. And it's not clear where they were going. When this happened, like in Egypt, it was they wanted the government down. Well, now in Spain, I mean, they have the socialist government in there. And then the socialist government, there was some elections, and, hey, the conservatives won a lot of seats. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, the conservatives have absolutely zero program to deal with what's affecting the economy, them being just totally the whores of the absolute wealthy. But here, they've got lots of money, too. All the money is here in the world. There's anything that we're suffering here, from foreclosure to all this unemployment to this lack of services and layoffs and state workers being furloughed and on and on and on. Whatever you can think of, there is enough money in the world to cover it. Let me see here. Of the 400 richest people in America have a combined wealth of $1.5 trillion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, say you took away, let me see, if you took away 90% of their money, I can't even do it.
There you go.
Yeah, there
grabbing
you go.
Their money again.
I never can do it. But the top 10 richest people in America, they've got a combined wealth of $270 billion. $270 billion between 10 people.
Whew.
So what would be if you took 10% of if you took away, tell me if I'm wrong, if you took 90% away.
Don't do the math question with me.
I think this is true. If you took away 90% of their wealth to deal with the problems the cities and the states were having, for instance, they would still have $27 billion between 10 people.
Yeah, they would be just fine.
So you can say, whoa, you know, I can hear something. It's their money. They earned it. Well, it's not even true with all of them, and I don't even, you know, them earning it is a whole other question. I don't know how Warren Buffett, who's got $45 billion, how he earned it. He invested it in this crap game called the stock market.
He made some phone calls.
Yeah. So what harm would come to them? Absolutely nothing. They would still be billionaires, not millionaires.
Billionaires.
If you're a millionaire,
comfortable.
You have almost, I would say, if you're a millionaire, you have everything a human being could reasonably want. I mean, you can't have, like some of these sheikhs have, a sterling silver car.
Yeah,
You cannot have that. Uh-huh. But you could have any car in the world, one of these, you know, $500,000 cars and all that.
Yeah, you could still get the $10 million, did you see that townhouse in Manhattan that's for sale for, what's 10 or 11 million? It has a pool in the living room.
Well, what was the Edge trying to do? The U2 guitarist. He wanted to buy some property out in Malibu.
Oh, he did?
Like a whole beach or something like that.
Yeah, well, he's got some dough.
Yeah, well, so the dough is here. On the back page of the business section of the New York Times for Thursday, there was this ad. I don't even know why I read it, because there was a letter that was a copy of something that had been written 100 years ago in 1911, and it's talking about the founder of the Bessemer Trust, Henry Phipps, and he was just advising his children to be frugal, and they say they continue to do that. And they're this privately held company. And, you know, here I'm holding it up.
What a joke, right? Say,
yeah, okay. Well, I mean, maybe they were.
Okay.
But in any event, that's why our clients rarely leave and why many have been with us for generations. It's not old-fashioned thinking, just old-fashioned values. We like to think that if Henry, that's the founder, were here today, he'd approve. He'd to read his letter and then tell you how you can visit it or learn more, call our president and CEO, John Hilton, and give his number. Minimum relationship, $10 million.
Oh,
in other words,
gosh,
this is a hedge fund that in order to be in,
you have to have a
minimum to invest of $10 million.
Phew.
This is when we have a situation of young men between 19 and 24 in the city of Detroit have an unemployment rate of 50%.
Oh, my God.
Where cities are furloughing their city workers one day a week and on like that. And you got these people that are partying like what? It's 1929.
Rock stars. George from Taylor wrote in to Call Talk Yes, and it's on this same very subject.
At yahoo.com.
Yeah. Rick Snyder gave $1.5 billion tax breaks to the rich and corporations, then by budget cuts, attacks the poor, the retired, and cuts revenue sharing where the cities are laying off firefighters, police, and bankrupting our local governments to make up the difference. Then, when the local government is bankrupt, he sends in emergency managers to disable the local government. Governor Snyder shoots us in the foot, then asks why we limp.
Yeah, and
thank you, George.
You go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Go over to the right-hand column, and there's information on recalling Governor Snyder. And I wonder, you know, with all these cutbacks in education, and he's part of the cutbacks. You know, I never even finished my thought about what I was going to talk about, tuition raises for Michigan college students, mm-hmm. but talk about that and how much it costs when we come back to educate Governor Rick Snyder's daughter.
Yeah, good.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My dad is a firefighter, but the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career services are available for students and graduates, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Would a career involving technology make your dreams come true? Call ITT Tech right now for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Pinnacle Tech in Shelby Township. American Home Fitness in Sterling Heights. Storage Pros in Farmington Hills, and Zumba with Ivy in Detroit.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour. A lot of callers on hold. Please stay there if you're trying. Keep trying. We'll get you on eventually. At 1 a.m. Eastern Time, Legalize It, Mon. Yolande Cadore is the director of the Strategic Partnerships for the Drug Policy Alliance. And she's talking about, this is the 40th anniversary week of the Nixon-initiated war on drugs. And she says, hey, it's a failure, you think?
Yeah.
I left off a plural here. It says war on drug.
Well, okay. It's okay. People knew what you meant.
I know you probably know the answer to this, but this is pretty unbelievable. Call off the global drug war. Who said that? Maybe you didn't see this.
Oh, I did see it, but I can't. What? Yeah, who
President
was that?
President Jimmy Carter.
Well, you know, he's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, I guess he says the report of the Global Commission on Drug Policy just says this has been a complete failure.
Well, he's just, I think he's tired of the wasted money. Yeah.
The report describes a total failure of the present global anti-drug effort, and in particular, America's war on drugs, which was declared 40 years ago. It notes that the global consumption of opiates has increased 34.5%, cocaine 27%, and cannabis 8.5% just since in the years 1998
to 2000. That is just... It's really shocking to me that those kind of harder drugs are increasing at much more rapid rate than marijuana.
In New York City, there have been 350,000 people arrested for having small amounts of marijuana since 2002. If you can imagine that.
Hmm.
And the people on this commission, by the way, include former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, former U.S. official George P. Shultz, who had cabinet posts under Reagan and Nixon, former U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker, former presidents of Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia, writers Carlos Fuentes and Mario Vargas Llosa, and on and on and on, like that. And also, I recorded this interview with, Yolanda Cadore from the Drug Policy Alliance in, I don't know, the last Tuesday or something like that. And they were getting set to have on June 17th these rallies all over the country. All these high-profile people were going to be denouncing the war on drugs. And I said, I'm going to be curious to see how many of these are reported in the media. You see any?
No, I did not.
Absolutely incredible. So we will hear from her and also Dale Maharidge, who has written something called Someplace Like America, Tales from the New Great Depression, which sounds a little depressing. But he, for 30 years, has been chronicling people, him writing, his buddy taking photographs of people that have been suffering the worst from the economy. Actually, where was that little thing? I'm not doing what I said I was going to do. But, how miserable. This index of misery says that we're in the worst shape we've been in 28 years. This was on this right-wing website. And so I'm thinking, the worst in 28 years. Well, what was happening 28 years ago? 1983.
Yeah.
All right. Here, we were talking about the tuition increases. And what's happened is that Rick Snyder, the Republican governor, and the Republican legislature said, we got to cut back all the money that we're giving out to the people of the United States so we can give tax breaks to businesses. So they've had to cut back on how much money from the state goes to universities. So the universities are raising their tuitions by up to 7%.
An extra an average undergrad student will spend an extra $800 a year.
So I mentioned places like Greece and England's the best because then they announced a tuition increase, and there were these huge demonstrations all across the country. And it's like students here. I know it's hard. I mean, if you're a student and you're saying, I can't believe I got to pay more money. I'm going to be more in debt after I leave college. It's not like, you know, you're listening somewhere in Sterling Heights or Birmingham or Southgate or Oak Park or someplace like that. And you're thinking, all right, I'm going to go lead 20,000 students.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what they don't function in those countries as these individual fragments of humanity. They're organized into like huge student unions and what have you. And so when some wrong is done to them by these conservative politicians in England, or in this case here, they can respond. We right now do not have the organization in place to do it. But in Spain, for instance, where there's huge occupations by young people, where there's what, like 50% unemployment of Spanish youth, they've reinvented these forms or invented them. And
they're a good example.
The other thing is, why in the world should college cost anybody anything?
I know.
If I said we're going to start charging people for high school, and don't think that that's not on somebody's agenda.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you would
privatize
think I was
everything.
Crazy.
Money, money, money.
Yeah. So why should college cost? I mean, the colleges used to be free. Land grant colleges like Michigan State University, the City College of New York. CCNY, famously without tuition. That could be again, but not if you're not properly taxing the wealthy and corporations, not if you're allowing hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars up into the trillions to be impacted wealth that is doing nothing except being, in this fantasy land called the stock market. Well, so we got Rick Snyder. His daughter goes to Green Hills School in Ann Arbor, and it just released a fundraising video, which school officials say that they need $20,000 per year per student, and that's not enough. They're not getting enough just out of that to keep the school running. They say tuition alone does not cover the cost of a Green Hills education.
20 grand.
At the same time that the school to which Snyder sends his own child can't make ends meet with a funding of $20,000 per pupil, the governor recently pushed through and signed legislation that cuts per pupil public school funding by $370 per student, bringing state funding to $6,846 per student. And there's some little differences in there. I mean, state funding
is awful.
Yeah, the state funding is not the only source of public school funds, so that they may wind up between like $11,500 on the high end. You can think Grosse Pointe, Birmingham, places like that, and $8,000 on the low end of funding. Can you say Detroit?
Yeah.
Right? So in Detroit, kids are getting an education at $8,000 per pupil. The governor is kids getting $20,000. What's wrong with this picture?
Everything.
There you go. All right, 313-298. Go ahead, say it for me.
313-298-9743. There is a couple of open lines.
Yeah. Here's Tristan in Dearborn. Tristan, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, Julian. How y'all doing tonight?
Hey,
we're good. What's up?
Yeah, you were talking about the Arab Festival earlier.
Yeah, where these Christian missionaries came in with these enormous signs. I thought, they said signs. I thought they'd be these little signs. I mean, the signs were like 8 feet tall, calling, the Prophet Muhammad names and what have you. Yeah.
That's correct. Well, I've lived in Dearborn for a few years now, and I was under the impression that when this country was created, it was created on the freedom of religion.
Yeah.
And I mean, in a way, it's despicable what these people are going out there and doing.
You mean these Christian missionaries?
Yes.
Yeah, good.
I mean, myself, I'm a Wiccan practitioner, but I'm not going to go there and denounce these people just because they don't follow my faith.
Exactly.
To each their own.
Well, but if the Lord has spoke to you, if you have to do, that's where you start getting into this arrogance and self-righteousness, which so many times throughout history has led to the slaughter of people, whether it's the Crusaders in, killing 30,000 people by sword in Jerusalem or Arab, Muslim armies invaded Europe, with the idea of spreading their religion. We got to keep these folks just kind of in their own little institutions or their big institutions, but do not let them get anywhere near the levers of power where they can actually command armies or create social policy or anything like that. If a particular politician has a religious belief, without even naming what it could be, and they're not all bad. I mean, the idea is, that somehow, because, all religionists aren't right wing, but those are the ones in every religion that cause all the problems, that think that somehow they're acting out God's will, where they're just acting out their own intolerance and insanity. All right, Tristan, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here's Al in Detroit. Hi, Al, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Hello,
Al. Hey, glad you could be here.
I'm glad I'm here, too.
Yeah.
If you really want to find out the truth of somebody's quote-unquote religion,
uh-huh.
A true practitioner of a religion wants to make peace for himself and everybody else.
That's right.
He or she wants to humble him or herself for a greater thing than themselves. The false practitioners of a quote-unquote religion want to make the religion small enough to fit their own preconceptions. They hide behind their God to wreak their own havoc and vengeance based on their own ideas. They're cowards. And as such, they try to bully and scare people into believing what they believe and attempt to tell them that if they don't believe the way they believe, they go into hell, purgatory, or whatever.
I get this quite a lot from not a lot of people, but a certain amount. It just really honks my chain. You know what I mean?
It just seems so bizarre because you can talk to the tolerant, loving religious people, and they'll tell you God still loves you.
There's
you
know, a level, though, of passive aggressivism with some of these people where we like,
well, it doesn't
well,
sound
know,
too passive.
Jesus loves you.
Yeah, oh, yeah. But, that's what, was it George Carlin? Maybe it was. He says, you know, if you don't believe, you're going to burn forever in hell. And he says, and God loves you.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, God would love everyone, right?
I guess. But God wouldn't like that behavior, according to from what I'm understanding.
Well said, Al. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Al.
Who says, oh, yeah, our pal Tom Hartman always says, well said, right?
Well said.
Well said, yeah. One of our colleagues. All right, let's continue on some lines beginning to open up. 313-298-9743. Here is Dave in Lincoln Park. Hi, Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We're good.
Good, hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing? I was just wanted to say a quick few things because you've had such a variety of topics. But I'll say with the Anthony Weiner story, I've never laughed so hard on The Daily Show.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I missed it.
Oh, yeah, it's a big story. They've been going on for about a week now.
Well, I can imagine. John Stewart was his buddy, or is his buddy.
Yeah, they've mentioned, I think they're from college or something. Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Maybe. I'm not
100%. They still hang, I think.
Yeah, anyway, there's also, I wanted to say that I fall into the category of, like, this, you know, I'm unemployed and I'm trying to get into college myself. And I'm actually 28, which, you know, I'm later than most people if you're going to college, but, you know, never too late.
Never too late.
Never too late.
You know, so.
And that's not even that old.
Do that. And so, yeah, and that's things I got to worry about. But I'm trying to go through the state right now, and they have, I don't know if you ever heard, like, of Michigan Rehabilitation Services, which it's a state-funded program. They help out people with disabilities and such.
Okay.
So, you know, and I got to try to figure out a way to go to college and make that work while still trying to find a job, and it's just a real tough time, you know.
Yeah, for sure. No question. So they're going to help you go to college?
Yeah. I think they pay for, like, the tuition and, like, the books and such.
Awesome.
Yeah, so they worked that out. And then,
well, I can believe you like my idea about free college tuition.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I believe it should be a state-funded issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bizarre. I mean, if you think we take it for granted that we go to all the other
grades
and for free, it's a part of public education. Why in the world? I mean, you could have both. I mean, what should it, like Michigan State and the University of Michigan and Ferris and places like that ought to be free, and the county schools, and then if they wanted to have you know these kind of right wing freak shows like what is it Hillsdale? I hope I'm calling it the right one.
I don't know.
If they want to charge people and people want to go there because they don't want you know a science based education or whatever, you know, fine, they can do that. But see, that could be a student movement of incredible power that would say we demand free college education, that if we're going to be citizens of this country, we're going to be properly educated, we want to take our roles in society, that we must be, not even a selfish thing, we must be, as a nation, have the most educated people imaginable, and it needs to be absolutely free. Well, we don't have any money. Well, start the damn wars.
Yeah, now we don't.
Start taxing the wealthy. Start taxing the corporation. Start taxing impacted wealth, people that are just sitting on tens of billions of dollars. And you got all the money in the world you need. You can open up our cities 5 days a week. You don't have to lay anybody off or anything like that. But as long as you have this, this greed going on, it ain't going to happen. Well, it's not even it's greed. It's beyond greed. Greed means kind of you want to get money and get what money can buy beyond and
operate. They want to keep it as it is.
Keep it and operate in ways that often aren't on the up and up.
Right.
But I'll tell you that happens a lot in the upper echelons of this economy. But this is so pathological that people would want to create a system where they, I mean, like if all of a sudden, I mean, even in broadcasting, say that if we, you and I, had any kind of ambition whatsoever.
Peter.
And we started making $300 or $400 million a year, I would think, what in the hell am I going to do with all that? And people say, you'll find something. No, you wouldn't. After a while, you could not make that kind of money. So, I mean, I would start thinking, where can I give it to?
What, to help someone.
What can I fund?
A cause,
yeah.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
I could sit here, rather than dreaming about buying my own island, I would think about, wow, how about if we create, you know, fill in the blanks?
We could set up Right Wing Island.
I mean, where they could all go.
You know how mean, nasty people say that back when AIDS came out, remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Said their own island. Right Wing Island. It'd be a big-ass island.
They could have a little fit all by themselves. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dave. By the way, I wanted to mention this. Pardon me. That there is a University of Michigan professor, his name's Juan Cole, J-U-A-N-C-O-L-E, and his website is juancole.com. And he hasn't been very good on the war in Libya, but generally on Middle East stuff, which is his specialty, he's excellent. But it turns out that a former CIA official has blown the whistle, saying that the officials in the Bush White House sought damaging personal information on him during the Iraq War because he was so critical. And, of course, he was right exactly on to the Bush lies. And
was he on NPR? At that time?
Yeah, well, yeah, he was. He was all over the place. So he said the White House at least twice asked intelligence officials to gather sensitive information on Juan Cole, who writes this blog that criticized the war. So the only way to really fight back against censorship is just go to what they want to keep you away from and realize, of course, why they want to do that. So you go to juancole.com. You go to my website, Peter Werbe. WERBE.com. There's also the story there as well. Here's Paul in Sterling Heights. Paul, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Jalene.
Hi.
Hey, Paul.
One point before I get to the one I called in for.
Sure.
I think instead of greed, the word you're looking for is avarice, because avarice has to do with attaining money and power.
Okay, that's good enough. Okay. Yeah, that's one of the cardinal sins, too.
Verbally assaulting Arabs for their religion, and the terms school busing, welfare queen, young buck, illegal aliens, acorn, have to do with racist code words.
Sure.
Race is what got Southern conservative Democrats to vote Republican. Nixon's Southern strategy worked.
Right, beginning with Ronald Reagan.
Many of the fascists I find myself debating tell me that Barack Hussein Obama never earned the scholarships which sent him to Harvard Law School and to him becoming editor of the Harvard Law Review. This isn't really about religion. It's about race.
Yep.
You're talking about what happened in, how does Dearborn have to do with race?
He was talking.
Muslims are coming to steal our freedom, man. Come on.
Yeah.
It's about race.
Well,
race and religion, I think they kind of meld together a little bit with some people.
Mexicans are coming to steal our jobs.
Well, when you put it all up into one little ugly ball, it's intolerance and stupidity. Because what happens is that a certain group becomes the scapegoat rather than you being forced to address the problem as it is. And one of the reasons that people go to the scapegoat is because they actually don't have the psychoanalytic courage to confront their masters. And that's what it is, because why would you, when you can blame easily some ethnic group, some religious group, some racial group for all the problems, as opposed to the people that have made hell out of this country where it has the capacity, as does the world, to be a paradise, why not just blame it on,
Yeah, and on that note, remember what I told you about earlier, Peter, about John McCain? Or was it McCain?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, McCain was, is now blaming illegal immigrants for the wildfires in the Southwest.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they came over and set everything on fire.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
All right, Paul, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Oh, I just saw this one. We've been waiting a while. It's Greg in Tallahassee, Florida. Greg, hi. You're on the air. Sorry to keep you waiting for so long.
Hey, Peter, let me identify myself. I'm a combat veteran of Vietnam, born and raised in Mount Clemens, Michigan, been a reader and subscriber of the Fifth Estate since its inception. In fact, I've actually had a couple of heated debates with you on Second Avenue.
Wow.
Way back in the early 70s.
Nice.
Back in the day, yeah.
But, I mean, I could filibuster this thing, but I want to, I'm a carpenter, and I want to put this wealth thing in geometrical perspective.
Wait, say that again?
The wealth thing.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm my net worth is, you know, even though I've been a carpenter all my life, my wealth is diminishing, and that if you represent my total wealth, my net wealth of a 1/16-inch diameter circle,
yeah,
a millionaire would be represented by a 1-inch diameter circle.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Turner would be represented by, I think, I did this a few years ago when I was just didn't have anything to do on the job. Ted Turner would be represented by, I can't remember, it's either a 7 or a 13-inch diameter circle.
Okay.
You know how much Bill Gates is worth?
Well, at the last time
a
I
lot.
Printed something out, it was $54 billion.
He's worth a 73-foot diameter circle.
I got you.
He is so much richer than even Ted Turner. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I know.
These guys can buy everything up, you know, the thing of supply and demand. They can buy everything up and just sit on it and wait it all out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and
and most people don't realize that.
And so much of it, of course, is, you know, in the stock market, which now looks, you know, this is because the stock market gained its footing again, regained it. That now we're told we're out of the recession. It's not a problem. Hey, Greg, good talking to you again. Thanks for joining us. I was looking at this. I mean, there was a little, you know, stock market had started dropping, kind of went up, finished up above 12,000. IPO fever. Which is initial public offering. This is a private company that then, you know, offers stock and then gets capitalized often, you know, with these internet companies, which can we say .com? Remember that? This was 1999 again. Shares of Pandora Media, a popular but unprofitable online music service. What's wrong with this thing?
Yeah, no kidding.
I got something I'd like you to invest in. Oh, what's that? Oh, it's called Pandora Media.
And there's no money.
Is it profitable? No. It operates at a loss.
But people really like it.
Here's all my money. So this is a bubble, folks. And, I mean, I hear scary stuff out there about the economy and the capacity for a major collapse that someone's going to say, hey, there is no there. Now, there's always worst-case scenarios put forth, and I'm not, I don't know what's going to happen, and neither does anybody. I mean, some people say they do. Some people say everything's going to get better. Some people say everything's going to go completely down the tubes. And you could read, actually, either of them, and they all make some sense within the kind of system they're putting together. And part of it depends on one's particular mood. I mean, most of us are in a pretty dark and pessimistic mood about what's in store for us. And partly is because we're not masters of our own fate. We have these other masters. I mean, partly it is the system itself that operates in a sense almost independently of human control. I mean, to be sure that when you institute Reaganomics, when you start giving more and more giveaways to the ultra wealthy, when you privilege corporations and wealthy people over the middle class and the working class, well, that's going to create bad social policy. We wind up with what we have. Oh, yeah, and take off regulation, right?
Right.
Yeah, deregulate everything. That was a great idea. That really...
Not so much.
Yeah, that really worked excellent, didn't it? I mean, right now, and I mean, why are these Democrats such wimps? I don't understand that. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, that was put in place by this great left-wing radical Richard Nixon... it's facing intense opposition from congressional Republicans and industry over a broad range of new air quality regulations. In other words, the EPA is doing, what's it doing? How could you phrase it? I mean, I can't think of an inventive phrase. How about this one? Doing its job.
Right.
Trying to protect the environment, and who lives in the environment? Oh, you,
you and me.
Yeah, and our family.
And all the creatures.
So these polluters that are these big power plants and other polluters, they don't want this because what's happening there, the EPA has agreed to delay by 2 months the release of a proposed rule on greenhouse gas emissions from these power plants and what have you. The delay of the rule, which will have a major impact on the nation's effort to reduce emissions of gases blamed for the global warming. Oh, well, we got a lot of time. What the hell? Is the latest step by the EPA to slow the issuing of regulation that its critics claim will hurt economic growth, drive up energy costs, and cut employment. Well, for one thing, this is what these corporations and their rich stooges, well, sometimes they're not even rich, but
lobbyists.
Their stooges in Congress say, oh, if you raise the minimum wage, it's going to mean people are going to be laid off, and it doesn't. What this would pretty much mean would be that we'd have a cleaner environment. In fact, what we should enforce on all these polluters is zero emissions. Zero emissions. And if you don't do it within 5 years, we're confiscating your corporation and let it being run as a public company by people who will stop poisoning us and the planet, right? But so it'll hurt economic growth. So what they are demanding essentially is the maintenance of an unaltered return on investment, even though that it is dependent upon pollution and environmental destruction. I don't know. I mean, is that clear? Am I being clear?
Well, kind of.
I mean, in other words, they're saying our profitability in part demands that we not put in pollution controls.
Right.
And if we have to spend money on that, that means we will have less profit, we will hire less people. So essentially, and I've used this phrase a lot before, it's economic blackmail, it's capitalist blackmail. These capitalists, it's owners of capital that control our fates. They're saying, if you force us to be environmentally sound, we're going to have less jobs for you. So which do you want? You want a job or do you want to be poisoned? You know, that's your two. Anyways, they're just full of it. The Economic Policy Institute found that the new regulations on mercury, arsenic, and other toxic air pollution from power plants proposed by the EPA would not provide a drag on the current economic recovery, and in fact would have a slightly positive impact on job growth in coming years. So get this. These polluters want to continue to emit into the air
pollute
mercury, arsenic, and other toxic air pollution. And say, well, they're going to poison us.
Poison. They don't care.
Not too good.
They don't care.
Yeah, I heard the actor Danny Glover speak the other day, right up close and personal. And
he was back in town.
And it was about a Detroit school. So I'll tell you about
right
that when we come back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Advanced Training Techniques in St. Clair Shores. Virtuoso Salon in Birmingham. Berkshire Pet Resorts in Troy, and Body Utopia in Canton.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
If you have a job instead of a career, will you be satisfied tomorrow? But if you develop knowledge and skills, who knows how far you can go? If you're interested in electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology, call ITT Technical Institute. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Our final segment, thanks for joining us. And at 1 a.m. Eastern, I'm going to be talking with a representative of the Drug Policy Alliance that says, legalize it, man. And
the final segment, so if you want to call.
All right, let's
do it now. Sure.
All right, one of the things I was putting forth and kind of standard with me is that there ought to be free college tuition, that we shouldn't be saddling you folks with this.
Loans.
Oh, man.
God.
I mean, there's some people that are beginning to think it is, in terms of career path, it's not worth
going to school.
Yeah, I mean, you might wind up in some professions like medicine, a couple $100,000 in debt.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Just nuts.
I mean, Cuba turns out the doctors, and it's all free. America,
naughty Cuba.
Yeah, some Americans, by the way, go to these Cuban medical schools for free.
Hey.
There's a whole program to send poor people from poor communities, train
there,
them.
Huh?
And Cuba trains doctors for people all over the world. There's room to criticize those folks, but there's a lot they do that's pretty decent. Here's Russell in Canton. Russell, hi, you're on the air.
I love you guys' show. I just want to say.
Well, thank you, Russell.
Just a couple of comments. Well, I guess number one is until the general population, wakes up. I mean, nothing's going to change, and people, like you said, they're just don't stick together anymore like they should, and unionize and stuff like that. But also, what surprises me is we don't hear nothing, about NAFTA, which is basically deindustrialized this company. You don't hear anything on news or. It's like everybody thinks it's still a good idea, and one last thing is, I don't think anybody really knows what the term income tax means. Maybe I'm wrong with it, but as far as I know, income tax, if you look at it, means corporate profit. That's what income tax is supposed to be.
Well, they don't pay too much tax. I mean, there is some difference between individual taxes and the taxes now on corporations, but all of it, I mean, individual taxes on the upper brackets has just been reduced over the years. And the idea of these Republicans, at least this is what they say, is that if you give rich people and corporations lots of money, in other words, you don't tax them heavily, then they'll spend more. But they don't. I mean, corporations right now are holding on to money and not investing it, not expanding their plants. I mean, there's some, like General Motors is and all that. But most of them just aren't. And they and the rich people, they you give them more money, they just use it for more speculation on the stock market. So, and by the way, you mentioned about waking up in unions and what have you, and I said about Danny Glover, the incredible actor. He was spoke the other day over at this incredible school.
Here in Detroit.
Yeah, here in Detroit. And, I'm totally blocking on it suddenly. What's the name of it? Ferguson. No, anyways, it's this academy that was, why am I, boy, this, I can't believe this, but I can't, let's suffice it to say, just Ferguson.
And it's an academy for young mothers, teen mothers.
Teen mothers, and they had such an incredible success rate with young urban mothers. That they, taught them everything from the kind of education that they
needed. Child care.
And they go on to college at this incredible rate. I'm looking at this
wonderful
article about this, and it just keeps calling it Ferguson. But there's another word at the head of it. Somebody emailed me. I don't know why my brain has stopped working. But anyway, Danny Glover was there, and I know what I was
going to
say,
Russell. And he is such a cool guy.
Yeah, that the UAW turned out en masse. The UAW members were probably at this rally to support the Katherine Ferguson Academy. Thank you, brain.
Good job.
Yeah. And it's in the middle of Detroit, and it has farming.
Oh,
there.
Urban farming.
Cool. It has animals there.
I love it.
Horses, goats, chickens, and
sounds
all
like
that.
Such a great place.
It
we
is.
Need more of that, less of this whole charter thing.
Yeah, and they were, well, here's the bad news in a way. Finally, a charter school has agreed
they're
to.
They're going to purchase it or
yeah, well, they're
take it over.
Keep it open.
But hopefully they'll keep it the same.
Yeah. Well, there goes, of course, the union teachers, which is
awful.
Yeah, unfortunate. All right, Russell, thank you very much. But there were so many. It was such a moving rally and demonstration at the Katherine Ferguson Academy over on around Lawton and what was the other street? Martin Luther King.
Okay, so the whole rally was for the teachers.
Yeah, well, yeah. For the school. And then it turned out to celebrate the fact that it was not going to close because at some point, they had to keep it open regardless. But the fact that it had actually had to go on the sales block.
Yeah.
That in order to keep it open is distressing, but the fact that it's open is pretty good. Okay, let's go to Mark in Ontario. Thanks for making our show international. Mark, what city are you calling from?
I'm calling from Leamington, Ontario.
Leamington. I love Leamington. I do. Right near...
I love Canada.
Yeah, right near the park? What is it? Point Pelee.
Yes.
The southernmost tip of Canada.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that, though.
And the one of the launch points for Pelee Island.
Yes, it is.
I've done it all.
Well, I was just calling because you were saying that it might be on somebody's agenda to make kids pay for high school, right?
Right.
Earlier. Well, when I went to school, high school here, I had to pay about $75 a year to go.
Really? How come?
They said it's for, like, yearbooks and anything that you needed during school and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But really, we never saw anything come back to us.
Huh.
That's weird.
What in the colleges in Canada, you got to pay for them, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Yeah, so nothing there. You had quite a little celebration out in Vancouver there the other day, hey?
Yeah, seen that on the news. That was kind of crazy.
That was astounding.
Yeah, the rioting.
Yeah, the rioting in Vancouver after they lost. I mean, another good reason that the Canadian teams ought to win. I guess.
Peter.
All right. Thanks a lot. Well, I appreciate. And who did they? I stopped following. Did they lose to San Jose?
No, it was Boston.
Oh, Boston. Oh, that's okay. I changed my mind.
Okay.
Because the only hockey I'll go to see is the original six teams.
Good for you.
I don't want to see them play...
Nashville.
They actually have a Nashville hockey team.
Yes, they do.
I won't do it. Just the original six. Used to be, of course, with the old National Hockey League, that they had six teams, and then they would have four of the top four teams would be in the semifinals. So I wonder, the semifinals. And so you could actually have like the fourth place team winning the Stanley Cup.
Right, yeah. Well,
I'm not sure that ever happened, but some of you folks know. Let's see. Here's Doug. Doug's in Toledo. Doug, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. I'm going back to the fact you guys said about the EPA.
Right, saying that if you put pollution regulations on corporations, that it would kill jobs.
Yes, and it absolutely does. I'm a union electrician, and I've been on several powerhouse jobs. Specifically coal burners, where they fuel gas desulfurizations and integrated gas combined cycles. And the fact of the matter is you will have emissions to efficiently provide electrical power to the masses. And to cut this, to stop this, is an absolute job killer. This country is sitting on a mountain of coal.
Yeah.
And to explain to the masses that we can go to a zero emission I guess what I'm trying to say is
zero emissions.
Just zero emissions, yeah. Is what? Is real or not real?
It's inefficient. It's inefficient, basically.
Well, listen, coal is like oil, is poisonous. At least we don't fight wars for coal.
It's very dirty.
But the whole manufacturing process and then the burning process is terrible. I mean, the first and foremost thing we ought to do in this country is institute a great program of conservation. Then there is all this solar power, wind power, all this stuff. And I don't know why you say, I mean, the...
There's so much technology being worked on
I'm not
well,
sure
in addition
how
to those.
The new toxic rule, according to the Economic Policy Institute, would have a modest positive impact on overall employment, likely leading to the creation of 28,000 to 158,000 jobs between now and 2015. The employment effect of the toxic rule on the utility industry itself could range from 17,000 jobs lost to 35,000 jobs gained. So you have a spread there. But again, I mean, we're going to keep poisoning ourselves. I mean, you know, the reason that there's one of the reasons that there's an epidemic of cancer in this country is because we're allowing these plants to emit things like mercury and arsenic and other heavy metals and particulate matter and all of that. I mean, you want to keep that going?
No, absolutely not. But however, take the Monroe power plant, the coal burner power plant off of Exit 13 in Monroe, Michigan. That is basically 95% water emissions right now. And take the Duke Energy's Edwardsport power plant, where they're basically brewing coal as coffee, grinding it down, taking out the gases and not burning the entire rock.
Well, look, Doug, I mean, I have your word on this. And, I mean, the people that represent the coal industry and the natural gas industry, they're always talking about how this is going to be pollution-free. Even President Obama was saying these nuclear plants aren't going to have the kind of emissions that you get from coal and what have you. But, you know, these fossil fuel promises always wind up to be disastrous. And obviously what's happening with nuclear power, nobody wants that anymore. I mean, talk about...
Well, the people who own the plants do.
Yeah. All right, I gotta run, Doug. Thank you very much. Let's see. Here's our next caller. It's Gerardo from Detroit. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi, guys. As a matter of fact, you know what? While listening to your show, I keep hearing... I'm making comments about... As I'm hearing all these other people, and it's kind of like, okay, I call for this, I call for that.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's good to, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, you know. Now, see, that's something that a lot of people, you know, it's like, hello, exercise it, just like what you guys were saying and what some people actually say. A few calls back, I think he said the word
if I'm saying it correctly, Avarice?
Avarice, A-V-E-R-I-C-E.
Okay.
Which is one of the cardinal sins, along with gluttony and stuff like that.
Well, see, I guess to just bring up how a person acts and what they do and what have you, I know so many people may not like if I were, well, many cultures through for thousands of years, Native American, even in the Bible, it says, you know, like, what is a person's heart? What is their spirit? What is really them? And there's too many people, like, in government, from local to federal, who they make a promise. People believe a promise. And some people really want to believe and do believe they're going to do something, and then they end up not just not doing it, but doing complete opposite.
Yeah. Well, that's what's
really
sticking.
Hurts.
Yeah. That's what's sticking.
Not just themselves, but the people they're supposed to represent, but they're not representing the people. And, you know, I think it's now, well, think about it. It's like there's taxes collected, they're put towards a program. And it's a needed program, needed service, what have you. All of a sudden, it can't come across because why? A few months down the road, all of a sudden somebody comes out and says, well, there's no money. Well, wait a minute. Taxes were taken. Property taxes, taxes in the paycheck.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, the money is all there. I mean, the problem that we have that we are hoping that an individual will act in our best interest. Of course, he or she is part of the system that rarely takes care of people in the manner that that it's capable of, either in terms of private employment or government programs or what have you. So we do what we really need, at least, and this doesn't even work completely that well where this does exist, but political parties that actually have a platform, and it doesn't even matter who the particular representative is, because he or she is acting in terms of the party's platform or program. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call, and thanks to all of you who wrote in to correct my spelling, which never has been very good. Avarice is A-V-A-R-I-C-E,
okay.
Not E. What are we talking about? Avarice, and let's see, somebody wrote in, it's a cardinal sin like lust and gluttony, a sin of excess.
Sounds like fun to me.
An inordinate craving for riches. Well,
I get that part.
Gluttony is okay.
We'll
what
stop
else?
There.
What are the
I mean,
things?
I enjoy lust. My rich food.
Well, I don't know. I like to combine lust and gluttony. Actually.
Okay, yeah, sure. Why not?
Why not? Yeah, yeah. Okay, here is Chris in Harrison Township. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, guys, how you doing?
We're good.
Good to hear. Yeah, the reason I called is I got reason to believe you might be mistaken about awarding Richard Nixon credit for creating the EPA.
Okay, I could be wrong. What?
Here's my evidence. Remember Tom Lehrer, the political satirist from the 60s?
The piano player had great songs, yeah.
Yeah, Pollution being one of them.
Sure.
Yeah, probably his signature tune. On that album, there's a newspaper clipping which said that it was Johnson who took steps to end pollution, which means that he probably did the heavy lifting as far as setting up the EPA, and it was Nixon who just happened to be there to cut the ribbon.
Well, let's see. Just did that real quickly.
I wouldn't doubt it.
EPA was proposed by President Nixon and began operation on...
Yeah, but maybe it wasn't called the EPA when Johnson... You know what I mean? Maybe Johnson was just talking about how we need to clean up the environment
and
protect it.
But the EPA began operation on December 3rd, 1970.
So factually, you're right about that, but
I guess, the reason I thought I might have been right, if you've got it in black and white that he did, then I guess he did.
No, it's Johnson. It's Nixon. Sorry.
One point, though, is that I did look through Nixon's memoirs, you know, RN.
Yeah.
And he didn't say anything about it.
Huh. Well, you know what? I think it was one of those things, you know, the way Clinton would sign Republican bills like NAFTA and the Telecommunications Act and repeal of Glass-Steagall and bill that allowed, you know, deregulated the banks a lot. In the same way is that Nixon would go, oh, all right. It was like all these Democrats were going, all right, yeah, here's the EPA. And I forgot there was a whole bunch of other things.
Clean
water.
Go away.
Yeah, like that. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And here's Kevin in Detroit. Kevin, hi. You're on the air. We're kind of getting down to the end of the program, so give me some headlines.
Yeah, I agree with you. Danny Glover does a good job, but I think you and Jolene, I rate it in this order. You, Jolene, Keith Olbermann, and Tom Hartman.
Who's the last one?
Hartman.
Oh, Tom Hartman.
Keith Olbermann and Hartman.
Yeah.
We're at the top.
Yeah.
You know, we listen to those other shows, so if you call and say the same thing and put us down in 3 and 4, we're going to call you out. I'm kidding. I graciously thank you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's very nice.
All right,
Kevin, thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it. And
Tom Hartman's a buddy of ours.
He is. And boy, he's the hardest working man.
My God, he's unreal.
All right, here's Chuck in Canton. Chuck, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Number one, Danny Glover's an idiot. I mean, he trashed on Trump when Trump had a good message.
Oh.
What happened?
What was the good message?
Well, the good message was to bring these jobs back from overseas, and I have the absolute solution on how to do that. Instead of giving these companies tax incentives to create jobs, what we need to start doing is penalizing these companies for sending these jobs out of the country. And along with the government overhaul that we need, I think that right there solves all our problems. What do you think?
Well, you know what?
He said, did you miss that part? He said Danny Glover's an idiot.
For?
Because he was ragging on Trump. For saying that something about bringing the jobs over here.
Well, let me get to the substantive part of it. The toothpaste is out of the tube, and I don't, you know, we've been deindustrialized, and I think the only way industry is going to come back to this country is when the corporations are able to drive our wages down to what they're having to pay overseas. And this way, if they pay us, you know, like $10 a day, not an hour, $10 a day, then they'll save transportation costs. But I didn't get the Glover thing again. What did Glover?
I said that Danny Glover's an idiot because right after Trump came out and started giving his messages about what we should do with this country, Danny Glover came on and started trashing him.
Wait a minute.
And Trump actually had a good message as to what we need to do. And
oh, God. Well, you're not going to get anywhere with this supporting Trump. First of all. No. And that guy's a joke. He just wanted attention for, you know, a bit because he loves attention as much as he loves money and hot babes. And the guy, come on.
Yeah, and also is...
Danny Glover is not an idiot.
Yeah, no, I'd say he's...
far from it.
But in any event, if... Trump, I mean, every one of those freaks over on the Republican side, well, they're not all freaks. I would say who's not a freak? Romney's not a freak.
My dad.
No, I meant of those presidential candidates.
Let's see. Romney, no, he's
not a freak.
He's not a freak.
And this Huntsman is not a freak. Palenti's, I mean, they're just.
Palenti's kind of a freak.
They're hack politicians. But, Trump, come on. But even a broken clock is right twice a day. Twice I've said it. All right, Chuck, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Got couple of great interviews coming up next. And first one, legalize it, man. Thank you, Athena. Right. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you so much. Thanks for everyone for calling.
Yep.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote. at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude! What happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. There's a lot of talk about the war in Afghanistan, now gone on 10 years, making it the longest war in U.S. history. Well, I think a lot of you are aware that there's an even longer war, and this war is being waged and has been waged for the last 40 years against the American people. It's called the War on Drugs, and it was initiated last Friday, the date that President Richard Nixon initiated it, calling it the worst problem confronting America. Well, I think most of us realize by now that it's been a disaster. The war on drugs is not to minimize some of the harm that can come from addiction of anything, whether it's alcohol or food or cigarettes or whatever. But the Drug Policy Alliance is taking some concerted action to make sure that we don't even have another, I don't know what, 40 days of it. And what we're going to be talking about, much of it occurred on the anniversary last Friday and the day before last Thursday. We're recording this on the Tuesday before it all, so it's sort of a prequel. Joining me from the Drug Policy Alliance in New York City is Yolanda Cordore, and she works with Ethan Nadelman, who's been on this show any number of times. He's the founder and the president of the Drug Policy Alliance. And Yolanda Cordore, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Great, thank you, Peter, for having us.
So we're in advance of all the stuff that it's too bad we didn't get a chance to publicize. But give us an idea, and maybe people can go search some websites, because normally, and unfortunately, a lot of activity like this doesn't get a big play. But there are so many big names involved in this. I think this would be a good reality check to see whether people have heard about this through the news sites and the TV news and the cable news. So we're a few days in advance, tell us what would be planned or what had been planned for this Thursday and Friday around the country.
Great. Well, again, thank you, Peter, for having the Drug Policy Alliance on. We are very, very excited. Actually, a lot of this kicked off about a week ago, a week and a half ago, with the release of the Global Commission report that had some pretty big names on. We had the former UN Secretary Kofi Annan, we had George Shultz, we had Sir Richard Branson, we had Paul Volcker and others, and a few other former presidents from Mexico, Colombia, Brazil, all calling the 40-year, calling our global drug policy and to some extent our domestic drug policy a failure.
Well, it's calling it a failure. We almost need a more spectacular and colossal war. Maybe you could just even run down some of the elements, the failure, both in terms of costs and also in terms of the human damage.
Right. So we know that we've spent $1 trillion.
We being just in the U.S.
Just in the U.S. On our drug policies. We know that we arrest about 800,000 people. We know that there's a disparate impact on communities of color. We know that, maybe drug use may have gone down a slight bit, but what we know also is that some of the consequences, people dying from overdose, people injecting drug users, becoming infected with HIV or hepatitis C, that has not gone down. So we do know that there is a fiscal cost, and it's a mounting fiscal cost that we've all heard and read about, the impacts that the fiscal nightmares in states. However, we've not seen states are continuing to put money into prison construction. And, a lot of folks that are being locked away are there for drug possession. And as a result of this unending war that President Nixon declared back on June 17, 1971, when he declared a war on drugs and declared drug abuse, or citing drug abuse as public enemy number one.
Yeah, that was the phrase I was looking for. Public enemy number one.
Public enemy number one.
Yeah, all the poverty, all of the environmental damage, wars around the world, and on, and that's public enemy number one. There's a famous marijuana advocate here in Detroit, Michigan, John Sinclair, said they put people in jail for smoking flowers. Now, the whole idea of suppressing drug usage, and drug abuse of anything, as I said, even food or anything, I mean, that's a medical problem, should be dealt with, but the whole idea of this trillion-dollar, 40-year war on drugs, which was, as I said at the introduction, is really a war on the American people's right to alter their consciousness. It was to protect us from ourselves, right? It was bad to use drugs. That ultimately is the rationale. Am I correct?
Right, and basically, what we've been saying is that, the war on drugs has become a war on people. It's a war on our families. It's a war on our civil liberties. It's a war on our rights. And we need to have an open dialogue. And one of the reasons for the events that happened over the past week and culminating with a series of events across the country is to start having that conversation. Start having that conversation in our churches. Start having that conversation at our kitchen tables. Start having that conversation in our state houses. What is the real impact and the real consequences of this war that we've waged for 40 years, not being able to concretely highlight some of the real results and real successes, while, again, we have wasted lives, wasted dollars, and no end in sight, no exit strategy.
Yolanda Kadori is my guest. She's from the Drug Policy Alliance. You can go to drugpolicy.org or nomoredrugwar.org as well. There'll also be a link on my site. I wonder if we're at a tipping point when you have prestigious people like former Secretary of State George Shultz and former FC the head of the Federal Reserve Paul Volcker coming out in something that that 30 years ago what you would have thought only hippies would have said, hey man, legalize it. You know, mm-hmm. Now they're saying that the war on drugs is a failure. What any signal point that we can say this is what turned public opinion or turned the opinion of these elites, essentially?
Well, I think there are a few things. I do believe we are at a tipping point. We have non-traditional allies. We have people who, you wouldn't necessarily see as bedfellows, joining in this effort and calling the war on drugs what it truly is, a war on people and a failure. And I think on a state level, a lot of it has to do and sort of came about with some of the fiscal crises that's happening, where we are really forced to prioritize and to really look at, how we're spending and why we're spending. And for a number of years, you had states that were investing more, millions more, into prisons than they were doing into schools, than they were doing into healthcare, than they were doing into jobs. And I think we are at the place where we need that shift. We need that paradigm shift. We need to start thinking about what it is that would really make our communities secure, what it is that would really make our communities safe, and what our real enemies are. And I think folks are coming to the realization that our public enemy number one may not be drug use.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's way down, particularly use. I mean, any intoxicant. I mean, what about alcohol? I mean, that's the standard argument. But let me approach an area you were just discussing, and that's the drain on the treasury of $1 trillion. Like all wars, the war on drugs is expensive, and very frequently the opponents of them, like myself, say point to what a waste of money this is. But it's really not like it's burned up in an incinerator. The money, which is essentially a wealth transfer from us who pay taxes, into the government, and then it is distributed throughout the economy. So in a sense, it's a Keynesian economic, a government pump priming program to within the economy. So you have a war on drugs, which employs probably a couple million people when you start factoring in everybody from the construction of prisons and prison guards and police and testing apparatuses, on and on and on. So I agree 100% that it's been a total waste of money, and like most wars, the Keynesian aspect of it doesn't work that well. But there's a lot of, I guess I could have made this a lot shorter to say, a lot of people have a highly vested interest in continuing the war on drugs.
And that is the case. And what we are saying is that there is, drugs would be with us. It's going to be here. And what we need to figure out the way to be smart about it. You can be tough in crime, but you can also be smart on drugs. And we advocate that you treat drug use as a public health issue. And, a lot of the folks that are, instead of investing your money into prisons, maybe we think about figuring ways to to think about treatment, to think about what it is that communities that have been economically neglected, socially, economically disinvested, socially neglected, what are some of the things that we can redirect and reallocate resources, right, where instead of, being employed because you're building a prison, maybe you're employed because you're building something else that would be beneficial to that community. So I think, there is a place. There's a place for everyone. I think we're off message. We are, it's not good policy, and there is an opportunity to course correct.
Well, interestingly, I was just about to say I agreed with you, but you didn't address what I asked. But you did at the end, because just like we could take all the resources and, well, let's not talk about resources, all the tax dollars that go into this enormous war machine that the United States builds and use it in a manner that would create a lot more jobs and be a lot more beneficial to the American people, at the end, I didn't see where you were going. But you were saying, yes, I mean, you can build schools rather than prisons. You can take prison guards and hire them as, I don't know, what else. But in the meantime, there is so much institutionalized resistance, I'm sure. Where do you see the biggest resistance to a change in our drug laws?
I think it's a lot of it has to do with the taboo and, you know, in what, you know, this thing that we've been demonized called drugs. You know, so you have, you know, communities where there isn't a conversation, right? And it's and part of the 40, part of what the Drug Policy Alliance is about and part of what this 40th anniversary commemoration and highlighting the impacts of the war on drugs is to really open up this conversation at multiple levels to say, let's figure out what are the things that are keeping us apart? Where are our differences? Right? Is it, if it's about saving lives? Is it about prevention? Is it about, you know, looking at, you know, creating a safer community, creating a safer society, then let's meet, then let's have that conversation. Because what we do have as evidence is a policy or a set of policies, both domestic and international, that has failed us, that has not worked. And so I think a lot of it, we may be thinking about and working toward the same end. What we have is that we know that there are things that we're doing that aren't working, and we're not willing, and we're not bold. And, you know, maybe we need to elect folks who are willing to really stand up and take a stand and say, you know what, this policy, and we have leaders who have started to do that. And I think with the, you know, with the Global Commission commissioners, maybe we're starting to get to a place where there is political will, and maybe it will provide other elected officials, the opportunity to really stand up and say, you know what, this is a failure. We agree, and we are now ready to make policies that are smart, that are based in science, and policies that get both sides to the end that they are hoping for.
Yolanda Cadore is my guest. She works with the Drug Policy Alliance. We're reaching her at her office in New York City. This you're listening to this on Sunday. It was recorded this last Tuesday. And Thursday and Friday were these national activities, all sorts of press conferences and different kinds of activities across the country. And at the beginning of the show, I said I wanted to challenge the listeners to remember whether they saw any of this on the mainstream news or whether this was just something that was buried away, because the discussion cannot go on unless it is it's above ground. I mean, we're talking about policy that involves the spending of billions of dollars, the ruination of so many lives, because what did they used to say? You know, I experimented with drugs in college. I always say, yeah, and it was a success. But beyond that, let's go back to the effects of all of this. One of the things you mentioned, that the racial component of the war on drugs. We very frequently, when you think, when the stereotype of a drug user is an African American who's often involved in crime or even violent crime, how does that respond to reality?
Well, what we do know is that there aren't much differences in drug use if we look at who is using drugs, right? It's even across the board, right? African Americans, Latinos use drugs at the, you know, equal levels to white people in this country. However, when we look at impact, and especially in terms of mass incarceration, what we do see is that there is a disparate racial impact. Black and brown folks are locked up at sometimes double the rates of white people in this country, although the youth, there are similar usage rates. And we can tell in the number of women, African-American women who are being incarcerated has increased about 700% over the last 10 years. So we do know. We know that there's a disparate impact. We do know that there is little or no difference in who is the folks that are using drugs. And we have New York as an example in terms of marijuana arrest rates where, you know, you have large and high numbers of African-American men and Latino men, young men in particular, who are being arrested for marijuana possession. Although we know, you know, and it's documented that, you know, white men in the city are using sometimes at higher rates than young black and brown men. So it's something that we definitely need to work on. It's something that the Drug Policy Alliance is working on. It's something that Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness, addresses brilliantly when it looks at disparate impacts, especially in the criminal justice system. So, and it's something that we're also looking to highlight during the 40th anniversary with some of the organizations that are holding events. We're doing a huge event at the National Press Club in D.C. with Reverend Jesse Jackson and the Institute for the Black World, Dr. Rand Daniels, to really look at, you know, the impact on communities of color. You know, their event is titled A War on the War on Drugs, actually, and its impact on the black community. We're working with the Samuel DeWitt Proctor Conference, which is made up of about 3,000 African-American churches, to really start having this conversation within the faith-based community about how these communities are being impacted, you know, what communities can do, and how to really hold policy makers in those communities accountable for locking away large numbers of folks without thinking about the collateral consequences. When you lock up, when you give young black men criminal records, so what does that mean 5-10 years? What are the public health impact of locking folks up? You know, what kinds of impact that has on, you know, life expectancy for those that are returning to the community. So, you know, it's an area where we've put lots of resources, and we're really looking to bring that conversation more into the mainstream to say, yes, there is a war on drugs. Yes, there is, you know, it's impacting everybody, but when we look closely at impacts, we know that there is a racial disparate, and there's a disparate racial impact as well.
Well, I think we're at a stage where everybody that has any politician that has any great amount of sense. And that's not all of them, that's for sure. But great numbers of them, and some of them are starting to make public statements, like you've quoted in the Global Commission on Drug Policy, its recent report saying that the war on drugs has been a failure internationally. And you've had the last three presidents of the United States who have all said that they used drugs at one time or another. Of course, you know, the first one that said he didn't inhale, but whatever. I know you're not going to say you're not hopeful. So when I ask a question saying, are you hopeful, in a way I'm trying to elicit sort of a realistic response. And I mean, nothing's going to happen in the next 3 months. I mean, and I know this is a hard call. I mean, are we talking about months? Are we talking about years? And what does the picture look like politically? Do you think before we get some sensible response to drug usage?
Right. Well, I think the first change, you know, a lot of what you hear from elected officials is that, you know, well, my community isn't there. You know, I'm not going to be reelected if I, you know, if I appear to be soft on crime and soft on drugs. So I think the first change is, you know, it's a personal one, you know, where we, you know, really figure out and, you know, learn a lot about what the realities of this war is. And, you know, we can then take a personal stand and really hold our elected officials accountable based on what we know and what we believe about this war on drugs. I do think that with the Global Commission report, it will, you know, see some conversations among elected officials and around politicians, not just domestically but also internationally, about really how we're spending and how, you know, the best ways to save lives. At the state level, I think if we continue with the, you know, if they get the fiscal state that they're in, some hard choices are going to be made. And we may see some results there. And at the federal level, again, it's, you know, to really pushing our congressional representatives to share with them what we know, that, you know, what you are putting billions of dollars into failed strategies at a time where, you know, unemployment rates are highest, where, you know, we have, you know, cutbacks in so many social services, where the social, where that safety net is becoming, you know, less and less accessible and available to folks who need it.
I think
there's a political climate and an economic climate that, you know, may see some real, that may, you know, maybe not intentionally and maybe not organically, but may come about as a result of just the time that we're in.
Well, I certainly hope so. Friday was the 40th anniversary of America's longest war, the U.S. war on drugs, $1 trillion wasted, millions of people with their lives ruined, and now at a point, as you correctly noted, that we just can't even afford it. Even if you support the complete suppression of drugs, it hasn't worked in the slightest. We didn't even have a chance. In fact, we're out of time to talk about the kind of violence that occurs in places like Mexico and Colombia, and in the violence in our own cities.
Exactly.
More is available at drugpolicyalliance.org and also at nomoredrugwar.org. I'll have a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Yolanda Kadori, thank you so much for sharing this information with us.
Thank you so much.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief, managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. Does your furnace need repair? Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Is your roof leaking, or are you ready to replace your windows? Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Big or small, no matter what your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro at fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online source of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. You can have instant access to roofers, plumbers, maids, handymen, chimney sweeps, remodelers, and many other professionals. Visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com and find the right home pro for your project. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My dad is a firefighter, but the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
If you have a job instead of a career, will you be satisfied tomorrow? But if you develop knowledge and skills, who knows how far you can go? If you're interested in electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology, call ITT Technical Institute. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. About 50 years ago, a writer named Michael Harrington wrote a book called The Other America, Poverty in the United States. I think it was 1962 in which it appeared. And it was kind of shocking to people because we had lived through this period of great prosperity following World War II, and that the idea that there were still people mired in poverty, not only in big cities, but also in the rural South, the rural Midwest. And there was some attempt during the 1960s, the so-called Great Society programs of Lyndon Johnson, to ameliorate that. But if anything, things have probably gotten a lot worse. In fact, my calculations for what they're worth, it's possible that as many as 40% of the American population live either in poverty or what we call near poverty. That may be a discussion for another time, though. And the ability to chronicle all this is usually done with statistics. But when it comes alive through writing and through photography, I think it has a special quality to it. And joining me now is Dale Maharaj. He has, along with photographer Michael Williamson, written and has a book with photographs in it called Someplace Like America, Tales from the New Great Depression. And Dale Maharaj is an associate professor at Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism, and he's published 7 books, including And Their Children After Them, which won a Pulitzer Prize, A Journey to Nowhere, The Saga of the New Underclass. Michael S. Williamson is a photographer at the Washington Post, and this project began, this is absolutely amazing, began like over 30 years ago, where Dale Maharaj and Michael Williamson decided they were going to cover America that's ignored by the mainstream media. By the way, and this is a big, by the way, a big BTW. Bruce Springsteen writes the foreword to this, and he was incredibly moved by Dale Maharaj's book, the one I mentioned last, Journey to Nowhere, The Saga of the New Underclass. And it's a privilege and a pleasure to welcome Dale Maharaj. He's in Northern California right now. That's the place to be. Dale, welcome to the broadcast.
Great to be here. Yeah, but you're talking about Southern California. We up here, we don't like to be compared to those guys down there.
There you go. And I'm sort of stumbling around here because there's so much here, both in terms of material and this lifelong journey with you and your photographer, or actually your partner who takes the photographs, Michael Williamson, in this project. Actually, tell us some about it. I mean, how I'm looking at a photograph of you guys. What were you, 15 when you began this?
We look like we were 15. We met at the newspaper in Sacramento, California. And when you started the show talking about the Other America, I was quite familiar with that book. And what we were finding when we went out, it was during the recession of 1982 in particular, was the Other America was expanding into what we used to call the middle class. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, originally. I was a blue-collar kid. I was actually a steel worker myself, briefly, in my youth. And so I understood that world. They weren't just closing down the factories. They were blowing them up. We heard in Youngstown, Ohio, that the big Ohio works, U.S. Steel, employed thousands and thousands of people. They dynamited the blast furnaces in 1982. So we went there in 1983, and that became the focal point of that first book, the death of steel, the death of industry, the loss of high-paying jobs replaced by Walmart jobs, and what that was doing to people. And, of course, with the end of the 1982 recession, that stuff didn't go away. It's only gotten worse. Now the economic malaise, and that's a kind way to put it, is spread across a broad spectrum of people. People who live in suburbs are hurting. The way people who were homeless were. They're losing their homes. You go into people's houses and you see refrigerators with no food because people just can't afford to pay the mortgage, you know, all the gas and for the food.
Well, I was just looking at the New York Times, and for Father's Day, there was an advertisement in the Times for a Patek Philippe, a watch for $38,000. So it's kind of like the Gilded Age. It's not so much like the 1930s, it's almost like the 1890s.
Yeah, the rich have gotten richer, of course, and I think that watch, that's God's way of telling you you're making too much money, man. It's
well,
crazy.
Well, tell us about the book though, Someplace Like America. So you've been following some of these people for a generation.
Well, actually, one of the families has Michigan ties. The most important, everybody's important, but the biggest part of the book covers this family we met in 1983 when we were in Texas. We were looking for homeless families. We'd heard they existed, and we found this family camping. They'd come down from Michigan. Jim Alexander was in the salt mine in Port Huron. He had a job there. He got laid off. And in those days, there were still oil jobs in Texas. So he took the family, Matthew and Jennifer, age 11 and 12, and his wife Bonnie. They went to Texas, got a job, got an apartment. Life was good, and the economy went bad there. They lost the apartment. He was a Vietnam vet, so going into a tent was a very difficult thing for him.
Sure.
We spent a week with that family, and they had no food, and it was real hard. But they were real strong people, and the kids were doing good in school, even though they were homeless. Flash forward, in 2009, 26 years later, I tracked them down. They moved back to Michigan. Jim was living up in Livingston, I believe, in northern Michigan. The kids were in Michigan as well. We had a reunion and learned their story. And, oh, my gosh, what a saga that family went through. They're doing better, nominally. Jim is retired now. Unfortunately, Bonnie had just passed away before we came out. But it's depression, a Great Depression mentality. You know, they don't buy anything on credit. They're very frugal. Matthew had lost his job in 2001 at a plastic extrusions factory somewhere near Detroit, and he ended up joining in the summer of 2001. And, of course, we all know what happened that fall. And now he has a job that's tied to the government, but he has to go do a tour of duty every couple of years for 6 months in Afghanistan or Iraq. He's got four small kids.
Wow. Wow.
And so we bring their story forward. It's sort of like this continuation of what this family went through 26 years ago. And we did it with a lot of other characters in the book. We tend to like people we write and photograph about, and we follow them. We become friends with them, and we kind of keep in touch. And so we bring a lot of stories forward. So there's a narration in the book. And I'm hoping there's lessons in these people's lives, and I believe there are strong lessons that we all can learn from, how we can survive these hard times, because they're the true experts. You mentioned, going on the street and talking to real people. I use statistics and figures, but they're secondary to the stories of people like the Alexander family, because, I think, as I say, people can read about this at any income bracket and learn to, and take away a strong lesson.
You know, there used to be a phrase, one photograph is worth a thousand words. I mean, you literally join the two of them together. I wonder if you think in the digital age that photographs have been devalued some.
Unfortunately, they have. Somebody like Michael Williamson, who still shoots for the Washington Post, goes all over the country. He's sort of like the Bob Dylan of the photography world. He's always on the road, a lot more than I am. His images are poetry. I call him a blues man with a camera.
Huh.
Michael evokes so many things in his images. They're not just pictures. They're not just snapshots. There's a whole lot more to them. And so in the internet, anybody can put up a photo, and we just get blizzarded with these things. But you get a photo like Michael's, and again, because we know these people, and we've spent years and years with them, they know us. They're intimate. They're very intimate photographs.
And you can hold them in your hand. You have the book in your hand. It's not like looking at it at a screen. It has a different quality to it, in my estimation.
Oh yeah. So I think the image. I'm a strong believer in the image. And Michael and I have done six books together now, and on various aspects of this lifelong project of covering workers and people. And I just think my words would be bereft without his photographs. You should see who you're reading about. I really believe that.
Yeah. The book is Someplace Like America, Tales from the New Great Depression. My guest is Dale Maharidge. He did the writing, and photographs by Michael Williamson, forward by Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen has a connection that goes right to your book, Journey to Nowhere, The Saga of the New Underclass, right?
Yeah, the book came out in 1985, and it's about a year-long run. We got a lot of attention, good, bad, and ugly. That's how it is with books. You get some bad reviews, you get a lot of good ones. But books always eventually die. They get remaindered. In 1995... I got a call from a woman who said Bruce Springsteen wants to meet you, and I thought Michael or somebody was pulling a joke on me.
Yeah.
And Michael, by chance, was in California doing some work, and so a few days later, we went to the Neil Young's Bridge Benefit in Mountain View, California. Met Bruce backstage, and he was inspired to write two songs by the book. And so I asked Bruce. I said, "How'd you know about our book?" He said, "I bought it when it came out." He was in the store and picked it up and bought it.
This was the acoustic Ghost of Tom Joad
exactly.
Album?
Exactly. Yeah. And the song, there's two songs. One is called The New Timer, about somebody new on the street. And the second one is called Youngstown.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
And it's an anthem. I mean, Bruce, in exactly 299 words in that song, captured our entire book, thousands and thousands of words and pictures.
Well, he is amazing.
I always knew Bruce was a great songwriter, but after witnessing how he translated my book into that song, wow. But he sings about the real people, the Marshall family, the man who said them big boys did what Hitler couldn't do.
Huh.
Mr. Marshall actually said something similar to that to me.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And remind people who Tom Joad is, Joad.
Good point, yes. Tom Joad is the character from The Grapes of Wrath, John Steinbeck. And of course, he was, you know, left Oklahoma, came to California looking for work, and had all kinds of horrible things happen to him, just like the people in our book, you know, 50 years later. And so that was a very thematic album Bruce did about workers and real people and their concerns. And you know, Bruce is the real deal. I mean, I meet a lot of celebrities in what I do, and a lot of them are I wouldn't give you a dime for. Bruce is 100% gold. There's no fake in Bruce.
He's an amazing guy, to be sure. His heart is just golden. You know, I've interviewed people that have done books somewhat similar to this. In other words, that they involved photographs of real people, and oftentimes they're about working people. There's a book, I can't think of the name of it offhand, that a woman did a book about waitresses in small towns. And it always seems to me, I mean, as a writer, I also write, I kind of find that easy to do. But saying to somebody, hey, we want to take your photographs, your photograph because you're poor or you're working class or you're in a Rust Belt town, I don't have it in me to approach anyone like that, number one. And number two, I'm amazed always that people say, hey, sure, take a photograph of me as an example of the downtrodden. Can you speak to that a little?
Well, you know, the thing is, Michael and I, the first thing we do is we listen to people, and we get to know them. Michael doesn't take his camera out, sometimes for days. And we don't want anybody who doesn't want to be documented. But having said that, we get to know people, and they see where we're coming from. And Michael, you know, has a very hard scrabble background. He had a mother who was a barmaid, traveled all over the country. She had five children by five men. She was killed when he was 11 years old. So he grew up in orphanages and foster homes after that. And I have this blue-collar background. So we're talking to people who we relate to. We have the same backgrounds as a lot of the people we're writing about. And so when people see you're coming from a place of understanding and genuine interest, it's amazing. People almost never say no to the picture by the time Michael gets his camera out.
Huh.
It just becomes a part of, it's weird. It's not a friendship, but again, as I say, I love the people in our book. I don't write about anybody I don't like. If I don't like them, I leave. I don't bother.
There's
a lot of genuine concern for the people we're documenting. And I think that breaks down a lot of those barriers.
Yeah, I'd imagine, because, you know, and the other thing is you guys don't show up in a big Buick or anything. And some of this, like on the flap of the dust jacket, there's the photographer Michael Williamson and you, Dale Maharaj, on the grain car of a freight train. And for all practical purposes, you look like tramps. Tramps, of course. You know the difference between, what is it, tramps, hobos, and bums?
A tramp and a hobo. A hobo will work. A bum won't work.
here you go. A tramp is a migratory worker. A hobo is a migratory non-worker. And a bum is a non-migratory non-worker. That's from the 1930s. But
there you go.
So you guys were on, you were working. So you what are you doing on the back of, this is 1982, on the back of a freight car?
Well, in those days, a lot of the jobless were riding freight trains, using like buses, free buses, to get from point A, where there was no work, to point B, where they hoped there to be work. So we got on trains. One train we were on had 30 people on it. Darn near all of them were new time jobless. So that was the way to document the story, not come pull up in the Cadillac in the rail yard when they get off the train and say, excuse me, sir, how was that? We just grab backpacks and off and on over about a three-year period, the biggest period being 4 months, we rode the rails.
You ever get busted by the bulls, as they used to say?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The railroad police, the bull, the bane of all hobos.
Yeah.
It's just like the 30s. They would come in, they would, if the jail wasn't full, I'd be taking you to jail. Sometimes they would take you to jail, but we got lucky and didn't get taken to jail. We learned how to evade the bulls after a couple of years of riding. We became pretty good hobos.
You've seen the film Wild Boys of the Road?
I don't know that one.
Oh, by William Wellman, 1932, about these young boys that when their town goes bust, their dad is out of work, and they start traveling on the road. There's huge battles at these hobo encampments with the police in Cleveland. All right, but let's not spend too much time on that. Dale Maharaj is my guest. He's done the writing for Someplace Like America, Tales from the New Great Depression, a foreword by Bruce Springsteen. It's published by University of California Press. And if you Google back streets with a plural, you will. The first thing that comes up is a website for all of this. There'll be a link on my site as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. On the cover of Someplace Like America, this gets back to the photograph, there's a man, looks like probably in his early 30s, maybe mid-30s, holding a boy, looks about 9 or 10. And it's such a striking photo, and the look in the man's eye, there's pride, there's sadness, even maybe a tad of anger. Tell us about him. Tell us about the photo.
Oh, that's Ken Platt in Youngstown, Ohio. Ken is an amazing human being. We met Ken, and he had red hair. He was a steel worker, and he was frustrated. He said, you know, what are we becoming? What's going to happen to America? And he saw the future. He said, if we have a future where we have jobs that pay, like, you know, Walmart and McDonald's, you're not going to invest in anything. You're not going to buy a house. You're going to buy bread and bologna. So I fell in love with this guy. This guy's great. So I quote him in Journey to Nowhere. And I stayed in touch with Ken over the years. And Ken is one of the rare success stories, people who did better or made it out of the quagmire. He had this thing called a Tandy, a computer, in 1983. And I'm messing around with this thing. Long story short, he became this computer expert. He learned how to digitize art, and he got a job at the Butler Art Museum in Youngstown, Ohio. So he went from being a steelworker to a white-collar guy. But when I saw him in 2009, his son was a steelworker. The boy he's holding about possibly lose his job. They were laying people off at the plant. And then about 2 weeks ago, Michael was in Youngstown, saw Ken, and they just raised his health care through the roof. He says, I can't afford it.
Huh.
What am I going to do? So even though he's working, and this is a story of Someplace Like America, even if you're working, how many people do we know, you know, I know, who have what look like great jobs, have suburban houses, they've had furloughs or rollbacks on their pay? And I don't know about you, but you lose 10% of your income, that'll break you.
That's tough. That's definitely tough. Hey, one of the things that I don't think I've made clear, and that's my fault in terms of questioning, in the book, Someplace Like America, there are shots that are 25 years and more apart, right? I mean,
yes.
People that you photographed in the early and wrote about in the early 80s and just recently. Tell us about that a little.
Well, you know, we did these before and afters. We have the Marshall family. The ones who inspired the Bruce Springsteen line about the big boys. We have at a kitchen table the mother, the father, the son, almost 30 years apart. Same thing with the Alexander boy and girl, Matthew and Jennifer. They were holding puppies in the picture in 1983. Michael set them on a stoop and had them do similar body language all those years later. So you can kind of see. And again, what you said earlier about the pictures, you look in people's eyes, there's a lot of truth. In Kent's eyes in the cover, there's a lot of anger, but also pride. In the Marshalls, there's a bit of sadness. And you saw it then, it was more recent defeated sadness. And what you see in the later pictures is years of defeat. People's eyes don't lie. And in them, to me, is the story of America, what's happened to us. And it's just... I could go on for hours about what I think should be done in America, and I won't, other than to say we have to start thinking about working people again and what they need and not just the hedge fund managers. We become a nation that just cares about what the hedge fund managers do, and of course they pay a lot less taxes percentage-wise than you or me. We got to start reversing that and get back to people. But that's what America is. It's people. We're a country. We're supposed to be a society. I'll stop there.
Okay, well, that's important. I mean, the information is, that we need is explicit. I was going to say explicit in some place like America. It sounds from some of what you quoted of some of the, your subjects, that they understood the process that's going on, that they have been attacked and defeated. On the other hand, a lot of people think that the fault lies with them, that the old 19th century Horatio Alger myth still is alive, that if I'm in bad economic straits, I've screwed up, I have a personal failing. Other people, look, you can just go to Royal Oak and Grosse Pointe and Birmingham, and you know, the cafes are filled and people are driving bright, shiny cars. I'm poor. Must be my fault. What's the self-image of people? Or it must be a range of it.
Peter, you nailed it. It's either or. People know that they've been downsized because of you know, corporate profits, greed, and all that. To a lot of people, look inward. What did I do wrong? And I really tell them. I said, you know, and after I hear their stories, you know, everybody makes mistakes. But generally, the people that we document, they pretty much have done everything right. I mean, they bought the house, they paid their bills. You know, they didn't overspend their money. But what people are doing, which is interesting, is, and this is kind of like the 30s, but not exactly similar. People are changing their lives. I have middle class people in the book who stopped using credit. They haven't had a credit card in 3 years. They'll never use credit again. They're growing their own food. There's a woman in Muskegon we met in a food line. She and her husband had a business. They lost it. Things went downhill. They separated. They had two kids. She ended up living with her sister to two kids. We met her in a food line, and she's telling us about how she's gonna, you know, come up from this and you know, grow her own food so they can eat well, save some money, not use credit, and try to instill some new values in her kids. So people are trying to move forward on their own, and this is, at this point in America, this is the best we're going to hope for. And I think in those stories in the book, there are a lot of lessons that we can learn from. And it's got to start changing, though, on a bigger level. We have to look at those bigger issues eventually.
Sure.
Start that conversation, though, as soon as we can.
When the people who are the subjects of your writing and of the photographs, when they see this, what's their reaction to it?
I have gotten emails. One thing I do, when I do a book like this, I demand the publisher give me extra copies and early, and then I send them, Federal Express, to everybody in the book. I believe they should see it first before anybody else. And so I did that. I sent out almost 50 books, actually. And I started getting emails and phone calls. There's a single mom in Texas I've known for 10 years. I did a story on her for a magazine back in 2000, and she wrote me, thank you for caring about single moms. Thank you for telling our story. That is the best. Forget all the any reviews I get. That's the review I want.
Yeah. Well,
did I get it right? Did I do it right? Did I do her justice? Does she feel I told her story with dignity?
And for a writer, it doesn't get much better than that, because there is just so much out there that isn't worth the printed word. This really is. The book is Someplace Like America, Tales from the New Great Depression. It's an extraordinary book published by the University of California. You can go to Backstreets, plural, Google that, and you'll find a link to it. There'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. The writing is done by Dale Maharaj, and he's been my guest. The photographs by Michael Williamson. The foreword by the great Bruce Springsteen. Dale, thanks so much for being on the broadcast.
It was great to be here, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance
refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power and Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425. It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears. Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
101.1 WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin.
Rocks.
Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career services are available for students and graduates, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Would a career involving technology make your dreams come true? Call ITT Tech right now for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Back to the rock.
Starts right now.
101, The Riff. WRAF and WRAF HD1 Detroit. All day tomorrow. Free ticket every hour for you, too. June 26th. More details at WRIF.com.